end.
Welcome to episode 57 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And this is our first episode with our newly minted employee, Gemma. You passed your probation last time around, didn't you?
Yep.
There's been a lot of talk about it on the social media, haven't there? People reacting to it. Everyone's been really happy for you.
They have.
Some people have been saying we were too harsh.
I know, and I don't want to say this because you'll end up getting really big-headed, but you were the most interactive tweet of the week, but also the whole month.
Really?
You're the most liked photo we've ever had on Instagram, and you're also the most liked and viewed post on Facebook since we've ever started. And I don't want to tell that, but that's
sorry,
not bad.
What?
You've done the hat trick, you're like that. Yo.
I kind of think she's getting too big for her boots now. Should we get rid of her?
Sack for being too arrogant.
Yeah. Far too successful.
She came in with cold, frosty, strongbow dark
fruits.
Yes, you did indeed.
Today.
They are cold, yes. Yeah. Thank
really
you very
cold.
Much.
Yeah. All right,
keeping to the requirements of the contract.
Indeed.
Don't
yes.
want to be out of my arse.
And you haven't said yet.
Nope.
Well done. It's all going well.
You've got one of those little
yeah,
clicker
like
things. You can click it every time she does it.
That'd be amazing.
Okay, so what have we got coming up on this episode? It's my topic this time around. We're going to discuss our top three most overemployed actors. Actors and actresses. It's those people that are often in films and you can't understand why. Why do they keep getting jobs? Why does Hollywood keep pushing them on us? So we'll talk about that later on. What's our review, Mark?
It is the one and only Doctor Strange, mm-hmm. Marvel's latest encounter.
Indeed it is. And Gemma, what is our rewatch? It was your pick.
It was, and we're going to be rewatching The Usual Suspects.
Fantastic. I'm really looking forward to digging into that one. We're also going to be doing our next round of Movie Mass Debate, where we're going to be talking about Angelina Jolie's best roles. And we're also going to give away a great prize. So let's get started. So it's time to discuss our top three most overemployed people in Hollywood. So we're not really talking about bad actors and actresses per se, it's just people we're kind of sick of seeing. Gemma, how did you approach this?
I approach this as thinking about films that I see, then I see that named person, I just think, oh really, them again? Surely there's someone else in the pipeline that they could have, you know, popped in somewhere. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily the fact that I hate these people.
Yeah.
And I genuinely don't. I'm just thinking, surely there's room for someone else to take the role or someone better suited.
Okay, hit us with your first one.
Okie doke. The first one, I'm probably going to get a lot of hate on social media. Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Oh dear, you're going to get a lot of hate from me. Forget social media. How dare you?
It's top of my list too.
Yes!
You are both you are both candy ass jabronis.
Yes!
That's all I can say about that.
Like I said, in my little disclaimer there, I don't necessarily hate him, but he does play a very one-note character throughout all of the films that he's been in. And maybe sub kind of Central Intelligence, because it was a genuinely good and funny film, but it's very much, you know, meat muscle kind of guy. He's going to beat someone. He's always going to give either a people's elbow or a rock bottom in every film. Check out especially Walking Tall. He definitely does that. But it's just the fact that I would enjoy a bit of a change of direction in him. So, you know, like with Be Cool, he played something completely different.
Yeah.
He didn't play the kind of the muscle-bound kind of guy who's going to save the day or cause trouble or whatever. But it would just be kind of nice to maybe see him something a little bit different. Maybe something with Spike Jonze directing him at the helm could be quite different. Might be a step too far with Lars von Trier. But you kind of know what you're getting. Each role is very much similar to the next, but it would be really nice to see him mixed up, especially when you consider what kind of films it is, especially with Fast 8 from next year. You know exactly what you're going to get, but people are going to pay their money. They're going to sit in the seats.
So it's not so much that he's in too many things. It's more the fact that he's in too many similar things.
Yeah, exactly. So it would be kind of nice to see him mix it up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I went for that same actor, but for the fact that how much he did in such a year. So 2010, which is crazy, we had four films in a year. Tooth Fairy, You Again, The Other Guys, and Faster. And I'm sorry, there's not one good film there.
The Other Guys is a very good film.
I'm not a big fan.
With Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I'm with Ben on that one, yeah.
But recently, I've just seen a lot of bad films. And again, 2011, we had Fast and Furious, Journey 2. A year later, G.I. Joe 2. Pain and Gain, which I enjoyed.
I like that film.
Hercules, San Andreas, same sort of character like Gemma said, and again. But it's also the fact of what we're getting ahead of us. So next year, we've got Jumanji, which we do not need.
No.
And he's going to be the muscly guy probably beating up a rhino.
With a rock bottom. Give a rock bottom to a rhino.
That would be all right. Yeah. We've got Baywatch, Fast 8, Journey 3, San Andreas 2, and also the remake of Big Trouble in Little China. There's a lot, a huge amount of films when I would rather just have one of those films and then a year go by and we get him again. So for me, it's just being forced upon me where I like the guy. Ben, you know I like the guy. Mm-hmm. I want him on the podcast, but I'm just sick.
It might have blown our chances now.
He'll want to come on every episode. But the fact is, it's just the pure volume I've seen him in. And it seems like there's never 6 months without seeing him. Central Intelligence, again, 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Too much.
I take both of your points. I hate you both. I'm absolutely furious that you would do this.
Are you fast and furious?
Yeah, brilliant. Well done, Gemma. Oh, God.
We said on the contract.
We said that she can't encourage you with puns. We didn't say she can't do puns herself. We've messed up there.
Talk to my lawyer.
I do agree. He is in a hell of a lot of films and they are all very samey. But the thing is, it's kind of... They're striking while the iron's hot. He's a bankable star, especially in franchise. They call him Franchise Viagra. You put him into a franchise and it explodes. He has a track record of doing this. So I kind of get why he's in so many things. But yeah, I take your point.
Also, wasn't he the most successful, highest earning film star last year? So
he is,
yeah, you're going to keep going.
Yeah.
Of course.
Come on then, Ben, what have you got?
I'm going to go for one that I've mentioned this before. This will not be a surprise to anyone. And I've kind of changed my opinion on him a little bit based on his last film, but it's Jai Courtney.
Yes.
So I genuinely did love Jai Courtney in Suicide Squad. I thought he was probably the best thing about the film. I thought he was fantastic as Captain Boomerang. But generally speaking, I don't know what the guy is for. He is one of the blandest, least charismatic. He's a charisma void. And he's always in these franchises. He was in Terminator. He was in the Die Hard franchise as well. And people keep plugging him into these films. And I don't understand why. Is he just one of the cheapest actors in Hollywood? I don't know. There must be a reason, because it's not his talent. But there must be a reason why he keeps getting picked up for these roles. And I don't know what it is.
I think he's kind of not the franchise Viagra and the complete opposite. He ruins franchises. He's kind of the one. He's like a pill that would just make you automatically flop. And for me in Terminator, he didn't need to be in it at any point. He did not add anything. And when I saw him, I went, ugh. Like, yeah. I didn't know he was in it.
You could have taken him out, and I don't think the film would have changed in any way, shape, or form.
No. It probably would have been better.
Yeah, probably, actually.
And then most recently, like you said, he's in the latest Die Hard film as the son of Bruce. Yeah. And he's ridiculous. He can't act. You can see his eyes kind of looking at the script. No. He's just terrible. You know the board's up helping him.
Yeah.
But he did restore a bit of respect for me recently in Suicide Squad. And I think it was because he wasn't in it too much. We had another seven or eight main characters.
It was an ensemble,
Give him the main role, I'm out.
I think I mentioned this when we talked about Suicide Squad, but I think one of the reasons why he's successful in that and not in other films is because he was allowed to use his native Australian accent. If he's not trying to concentrate on putting on a fake accent, he's then free to act a bit more.
Yeah.
So I think that was part of it.
I think he'd ace like a reality TV show. He'd be the best thing about it. Not trying to be someone else. He's like couscous. Just absorbs the water, but no flavour.
Couscous. It's just shit rice.
Gemma?
Yes?
Come on, don't have another one of mine. I want this topic to go on more than 10 minutes.
All right, then. So I'm going for the ladies, Joyce. So for me, it's Melissa McCarthy.
Okay.
And again, I like her, but it's just the fact that when I do see her name on a poster now, there's nothing new. And it really pains me because she's excellent in Spy.
Mm-hmm.
I quite liked her in Ghostbusters as well. But if you consider some of the films she's done the past 2-3 years, so we've had things like Tammy. We've had things like Identity Thief.
The Boss, was that her?
The Boss. But again, it's kind of like, she's almost like a female Chris Farley. Back in the 90s, for those of you who weren't born by then, Chris Farley was an SNL kind of graduate of the TV show. So he played very loud characters, always bumbling kind of big guy, who always got himself into scrapes and japes and what have you. Now, Melissa McCarthy, she was not SNL alumni, was she? She came from the back of that TV show that I can't remember right now.
Mike and Molly.
Thank you. But it's kind of... It's very much a very generic kind of character that she does play. Always loud, always sort of against the grain of what is acceptable for a female to be in today's age. but it's getting tired.
It is. She's always brash and obnoxious mm-hmm. and loud and yep. aggressive. It's always that same mold. And I think she's really funny. I think she's a genuinely talented actress and comedian, but it is too much. Yeah. It's the same shit over and over.
It might be the fact that, you know, that typecasting is very much well and alive in Hollywood mm-hmm. today. But it does get to the point where when I do see her name on a poster, guaranteed that I'm not going to want to check it out. Mm-hmm. And for me, there's plenty of talented actresses out there and in comedians as well. She just needs to be utilised in the right way.
Yeah.
Do what they did with Jim Carrey. Give her like Eternal Sunshine, something like that, gotcha. Where you actually go, right, let's see a real serious side of you for an hour and a half. No little gags at the end.
No.
Be really serious for a whole film and then mm-hmm. let's see how it works out.
Yeah, or no Mr. Poppins Penguins.
Oh, the Man on the Moon and stuff like yeah. that. And we got some serious great roles.
I think she did do one. What was the film that she was in with Bill Murray?
Where he's the next door neighbour.
Yeah.
Oh, crumbs.
It was not so long ago. It was last year or the year before, maybe. And that was more serious, and she was good in that.
More of that, please.
Yeah.
It would just be nice to have a bit of diversity to what she's capable of doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to jump on straight away with that with a female as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, for me, this is crazy. In 5 years, this person's had 12 films out, which is more than 2 a year, and they're all huge. Sorry, but Jennifer Lawrence.
Getting sick of her.
Controversial.
Don't get me wrong, she can act. You know, this person is hot. You know, in Hollywood right now, she is on the big blockbuster. She's making a lot of money, and I've got a lot of respect for the roles. You know, Silver Lining Playbook is one of my favourite films the last few years. American Hustle was great, so she's been great in that. And I do love her in the X-Men films, but it's the pure volume I'm getting. Literally, House at the End of the Street, which was dreadful.
It was terrible.
Hunger Games, and that's not her fault, but they seem to be one a week. I was like, and now, every time I went to the cinema, there's a new trailer for a new one. Then for me, I'm sorry, but Joy, a film about a mop saleswoman.
It was wank.
Funny, it sounds like the complete opposite of what that film is called.
Honestly, like the pure volume, we're getting 2 or 3 a year films and they're big, so that's cool, but I'm just done with it. I know that I've not even looked at upcoming films on IMDb, but there'll be 3 or 4 next year. There'll be another 4. Too much. Have a break. I just want to forget her for a while and then be reminded that she's still on the scene. Like you get with Bill Murray, like you get with Jim Carrey, where they come, oh, wicked, I want to see them again. Fucking hell, it's another week, let's see them again.
Do you know what? I wouldn't have thought of her. She wouldn't have crossed my mind for this topic, but I agree with you.
I agree.
She is a phenomenal actress. She's one of the very best in the business, but it's too much. There's too much of her.
Yeah. You just need to put the Jennifer Lawrence down.
And what I've noticed,
put her down. I mean, that's probably an extreme reaction.
Whoa.
But what the most frustrating part is, if you look at years, like in 2012, she had the first Hunger Games and Silver Lining, which was great, and then this House at the End of the Street, which was turd.
It was awful.
A year later, American Hustle, which we all love. We know how great that is. Mm. Then a film called Devil You Know, which was utter tripe.
I've never heard of that.
Nope, and I'm glad I haven't either.
And I don't know how you get really good and then really bad. You know, there's too much of a mix. It's frustrating.
I don't know. Look at Cuba Gooding Jr.'s track record. It can be done.
Too much rubbish. Not happy. Sick of it. Sick of her. Sick of her face. Sick of her hair. Sick of everything. Done. Too much. She just gets on my tits. Sorry. Ben.
But what do you really think?
I'm getting angry. I am getting angry. I'm just thinking about how much, literally, a film about a mop. And I think it probably won Oscars.
I think she was nominated.
Of course she was. Oh, God.
She was.
Ridiculous. Sorry, Ben, pick a woman.
I am going to pick a woman as well. I'm going with Kristen Stewart.
I don't
like that woman at all. She is slack-jawed. Whenever you see her, her mouth is agape. It's like, close your fucking mouth. What's wrong with her? But she doesn't look right, and I find her utterly, utterly bland. And some director, I think she had a film at Cannes recently, was talking about how she's an American national treasure, she's one of the very best actors. I'm like, what have you been watching? Because she's just this slack-jawed gimp in everything I see.
The topic wasn't worst looking to say in the top three characters of all time. I'm trying to think. I will give you the fact that I remember, like, she was the ultimate MTV pinup girl, winning all the popcorn awards for about 3 years running because she did every teenage. The girlfriend who wasn't popular, who wins over the jock or something.
It's, all the it's, Twilight films.
God damn.
Vampire bait.
I did like one film with her in that was with Matey Boy from The Social
Adventureland.
Network.
Yes. That's a great
that
film.
That is okay. I really did enjoy that.
It's like a really good film.
Yeah. But she is just so bland. She has no range as far as I can tell. Or if she has it, she's not yet used it. Mm. She's the same kind of disaffected, slacker hipster in everything. And yep. I just think, do something different, act.
Also, she always brushes her hair out of her eyes. Mm. It's the Stuart move. You know where like everyone has like a special move? It's like, Stuart, smash, hair out of face. Every single film, seriously, just
so
check
now you've told
film.
Me this, I'll mm? end up watching I won't oh, end up watching
Adventureland,
the Twilight
trilogy. You say I'm, there's too many hairs going on with me. There's too many hair flicks with her. Unreal.
Well, you know, we weren't going to get her to replace you, so don't worry. But yeah, I'm loving everyone so far. They're all justifiable in every possible way. Screw it up, Gemma.
All right, then. Brilliant. That's what I do. My third choice is a bit of a Hollywood big hitter, and it's Johnny Depp.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Johnny Depp, I think there was a point in the early to mid-90s, or late 80s to mid-90s, where he was kind of hitting it out of the park with every single role he was doing because it was something ridiculously absurd and strange. So Edward Scissorhands, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. And I think it got to a point, it's almost like the Adam Sandler effect, where he was making films just for the sake of it. And you could tell when watching him, he was bored. Obviously, we're going to be treated to a brand new Pirates of the Caribbean film very, very soon. Oh, and I don't understand Christ. What we've done as human beings to deserve this. Maybe it's Brexit. I don't know. But
that was the reason people voted. Exactly. Because it came with, as long as you vote to leave, yeah. we get Pirates 9.
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks, UK. But he's even admitted in the past he doesn't really watch his films anymore, which leads me to suggest that big studios out there just want his name on a poster. And it's a real shame because when he puts his mind to it, he is really, really great. But we've had things like Transcendence. We've had things like Secret Window. We've obviously had the Pirates of the Caribbean films that are relentlessly coming back for no stupid reason.
I've got two words for you, Gemma.
Go.
Yoga hoses.
Can Tusk. I give you two more words?
Yeah.
Moose jaws.
He'll be back.
And he's there for an unnecessary reason, I believe. And obviously as well with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, I think Tim Burton just wanted to get his mate on board. But
yeah.
this was at a time when, before in the past, he was doing some really good films, obviously, like Edward Scissorhands, even Ed Wood, which is one of my favourite Tim Burton films of all time. Mm-hmm. But now he's just signing on the dotted line to get the money, and studios are capitalising on it, and it's boring.
And it's weird, because prior to the first Pirates of the Caribbean, he wasn't a blockbuster guy.
No.
He was in almost no blockbusters prior to that. That film then made him hot property in Hollywood,
yeah.
and he stopped being the indie kid that he had been, mm-hmm. and then has just made a lot of shit since.
And it makes me long for the days when he would sign up for a John Waters film like mm-hmm. Crybaby.
Oh, it's frustrating, because stuff like Blow, you know.
Oh, my God, yes.
From start to finish, just magnificent.
Yeah.
But then as soon as he got it on with Burton, them mm-hmm. two were literally at it.
They were.
All the time. Working together.
I question your word choice there.
At it. And I blame Tim Burton a lot,
yeah.
because he made him that, oh, hey, oh,
yeah,
all the time in every role. And it was just like, that annoyed me. And
it did.
Now he's just working with, joking aside, Kevin Smith doing small roles. What is he going to do mm-hmm. now?
Where do you go from here?
Well, Pirates 8, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Black Mass was supposed to be his big comeback, his return to form. And I liked that film. I didn't think it was great. I thought it was good. But he's not really capitalised on that. He's now just going back to doing more Pirates of the Caribbean films.
And I think people like Joel Edgerton kind of outshone him in Black Mass as well, who is, I'm glad to see, is getting on the posters. But I don't believe he's too overemployed or too this, that, the other.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, Johnny Depp is.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to finish with one that's a little bit political and might raise a few eyebrows. Mr. William Farrell.
Uh-oh.
Mr. who?
William Farrell.
Uh-oh, guys, come on, your friends here, guys. Don't do this, remember
I mean?
Your friends.
Let me put my point across. Well, I was furious when you said The Rock, but this is taking the piss.
This is my pure reason, okay? I do love the guy, and when you look at his old work, Old School, Step Brothers, Stranger Than Fiction, Elf, some of the best films ever made. But I've looked at the last few that we've not ever made.
Stranger Than Fiction is one of the best films ever made.
But really enjoyable. You really appreciate him. And it was not too much. You know, there's a good few years between them. Recently, we've had Zoolander 2, which I've been told is dreadful.
It's terrible, yeah.
Daddy's Home.
That is awful. I actually stopped it once the motorcycle went into the house and I went, I'm done here.
Yeah. The only good thing about that film was John Cena turning up at the end.
Oh.
And that's saying something. Yeah. Get Hard.
That's shit.
The Internship.
Haven't seen it.
No. I've heard Anchorman 2 is dreadful.
It's not dreadful, it's just unnecessary.
And The Campaign.
was okay.
That's what I mean. Mm-hmm. And this is the same guy that did Old School, mm-hmm. you know.
Frank the Tank.
Exactly. Blades of Glory was the moment I started to think, it's not quite working for me anymore. He's kind of not got that charm he used to have.
I love that film.
Me too.
It was on telly the other week at like 1 a.m. and I was going to bed and it had just started. I was like, oh, fuck sleeping. I'm watching this.
Love it.
Napoleon Dynamite on skates. But too much, you know, there's too much coming out where he's not putting his heart into it anymore. And stuff like Get Hard, the poster itself makes me go, I don't want to watch this shit.
Yeah, Get Hard, Get Lost.
Exactly. So it's so true. You know, it's just dreadful. And he's not doing these amazing roles where I want to go and see this film because he's in it. And I would normally do that. Elf is, it's a Christmas film with a midget. Okay, I want to go and see this. I want to go and see
don't
this.
Think that's the politically correct term.
But Will Ferrell's in it. Okay, I'm there. You know, Old School, incredible. Yes. He has that film in his hand, and there's amazing cast. The latest stuff he's done, I'm sorry, and even you went for that list. It's like the Kevin Smith thing. Mm-hmm. Is there's not a good, really standout film where you're like, that was amazing.
I would agree. His quality control filter is faulty. Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of it coming through because that was in about the last 3 years. So I'm sorry. Yeah. I love the guy. We're not saying they're bad actors, but there's too much. And it's the same role every time. It's him being him. I've seen his Saturday Night Live shows. It's him being him. He's not even trying anything different anymore. Sorry.
I'm annoyed. but I do actually agree. Yes. I do think he's doing a hell of a lot of movies and a lot of them aren't very good. And it is a shame because I think he's the funniest bloke on earth.
Mm-hmm. And you know we're going to get Anchorman 3 soon. You know it's coming.
Yeah.
Come on then, finish me off. Finish it off. That's why we don't have a YouTube channel. Oh,
Jesus Christ. I'm going with a chap called Ansel Elgort.
Oh, it's the guy from The Fault in Our Stars.
Yeah.
I hate his little face.
I hate his face so much. Honestly, he's got one of those faces that if I started punching it, I wouldn't stop
and
until
like,
my hand broke.
And you know what? He'd be turning around saying, go, what you got, bro? Come on.
God. He's the douchiest of douchebags. And he's always in those kind of indie teen films like The Fault in Our Stars, Paper Towns. Yeah. He's in the Divergent series of movies as well. I just can't stand him, and I don't know why Hollywood loves him, and they do. They're pumping him into things every week now. He's linked with everything. Like, he was linked with being the new Han Solo in the Star Wars film, and thankfully he didn't get it. He's the main character in the new Edgar Wright film that's coming out next year, Baby Driver. Yeah, I know. I'm open to changing my opinion on him. If he ends up being brilliant in Baby Driver, great. More power to him. I hope he is. But at the minute, I just can't stand his face.
I can't imagine Edgar would get him and he would be tossed. Mm. Edgar's going to get the right person for the right job. Look at his CV.
I know.
But I didn't know he was the main role.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
If you want to enjoy that performance, though, watch The Fault in the Stars. I watched it with my missus.
Yeah.
You get to see him gradually die. It's pretty good. Like, getting weaker and weaker. And, you know, it's not a spoiler.
No.
You know what I mean? He's a goner. He dies of a very slow and painful death.
Oh, I might watch that tonight.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, I definitely get what you mean. I don't see the bankable attraction with this chap. I always see him as a bit of a filler guy.
Mm-hmm.
So someone who's just there in the background, plays sort of like a mate to the jock or something like that. So it does perplex me as to why he's getting the push for main roles.
Yeah, I don't get it.
No, but I've heard a lot of interviews with him in the past and he does sound like a major douche.
Douche is the perfect word for him.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of hate there.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, not all the actors we chose are hated.
No.
But let's go to social media.
Shall we?
They've always got some good ones.
They do indeed. We've got some corkers on here as well. So on Twitter, at Jessabelli. But Dwayne Johnson.
How dare you.
Jennifer Lawrence, for purely for getting on my tits. I love you, Jessabelli. And Samuel L. Jackson.
He is in everything.
He is in everything.
Every film ever made.
Everything. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then we got Brinky121 said, Nick Cage, he can't even read the script first.
He can't. He surely literally goes to his agent, I'll do anything. Just make sure it's paying over, you know, 100 quid. Yeah.
And also,
at the bees!
And if you ever want to laugh as well, YouTube, Nick Cage, Terry Wogan, it is the greatest.
I've seen it.
Oh, you know what?
He's coked up and he comes out and does this forward roll.
Like kicks, is all thrown up.
So we say allegedly.
Yes, thrown up business cards. Love him.
He's wasted.
Brinky121 also put Adam Sandler and The Rock. It's a very popular choice, Ben. Sorry.
I'm furious.
Adam Sandler is in a lot of shit.
Yes.
But I just didn't need to mention it, I didn't think.
We've been there already. Kostmeyer said Denzel Washington, Samuel L. Jackson, and a very controversial choice, Chris Pratt. and I can kind of see where they're coming from.
He is the hot thing in Hollywood at the minute. Mm. He is in a hell of a lot of films, and they're very samey roles, so I get that. I love the man, but I do get where they're coming from.
But when it's hot, you're not going to put it on a window ledge to keep it cool, are you? So.
Not sure about that one.
He is Star-Lord all the time.
Exactly. At Blamethrower 83, Vince Vaughn is a turd that won't flush. Jai Courtney and The Rock. And then we have Kevin Wright's stuff. Last one. Jack Black, Ben Stiller and Will Ferrell.
Jack Black, I haven't seen for a while.
Yeah, he doesn't do that much these days.
No. Is he dead?
No, he's not.
Still knocking around.
Well, I haven't seen him at all. He's not doing any Tenacious D stuff. No. He's not just being a dick.
The last thing I saw him in was a very small role in Sex Tape, which is one of the shittest films I've ever seen.
You see, I saw him as a one of those bit players in Community when he was trying to muscle in on the group.
That's a good episode.
I love that. And then I think at the end he just went in with Owen Wilson's group. Rightfully so.
I can't argue with any of the social media ones.
No, I can't.
Denzel Washington is Denzel Washington in everything ever released.
And I hate to say that Chris Pratt is everywhere.
Yeah.
It's my topic. I was on skiptotheend.co.uk the other day.
It's a good website, that.
It's a beautiful website.
What's that website again?
You know it by now. skiptotheend.co.uk. But I was looking at all our previous topics because it's interesting that we've got to episode 57, 57 different topics. And it blew my mind that we haven't picked a top three for this one genre of film. I just couldn't believe it. We've done horrors, we've done comedy. So on the next episode, I want you both to come back and myself with the top three thrillers.
Oh my God.
Can you believe we've never done
that? That is a good one.
2 years in and we've never done it. And we all love them.
Yeah.
So that's the topic on the next episode. We've been to see the latest movie from the Marvel Studios, Doctor Strange. After mangling his hands in a car crash, gifted neurosurgeon Stephen Strange finds his career in ruins. Desperate for healing, he heads to Nepal, where a secret order of magicians led by the Ancient One introduce him to the world of mystic arts. He then has to take on a rogue sorcerer and a powerful being from another universe. Oh, how do we start this one? I'm going to throw it straight to Ben.
I really, really like this film, and of all the Marvel films, which all of which I like, this is the first one where as soon as it ended I thought, I want to watch this again straight away. Not necessarily because it was the best Marvel film or better than other films that I've enjoyed like Guardians or Thor, but because it had so much going on, especially visually, that I really, really wanted to sit through it again straight away.
What are we doing then? Let's just go. Let's sod this review off.
There's another viewing in like an hour. Let's shoot.
Gemma.
Yes. Wow. Oh my God. In the risk of sounding like an 18-year-old, that was so cool. That was really awesome. Mm-hmm. It's the most impressive thing I've seen all year. I don't think anything has come to that kind of level in terms of visual. I don't think anything will cut. We got December yet. We got Rogue One, so I'll stop right there. I'm going to have to agree with Ben. I absolutely enjoyed it. As a standalone film where not a lot of people have really heard about the story of Doctor Strange, it made me want to invest in it even more. Mm-hmm. Brilliant casting. Absolutely impressive. I was really blown away.
I'm exactly on there with you guys. I was literally very taken back because the way it's filmed and the way it's directed and the visual effects is like nothing I've seen. The closest thing I want to say, and it's a terrible film, was Green Lantern with the kind of the 3D effect, which really was great. Oh, it was so good.
I
am so relieved because we went in and I remember Ben saying just before we went in, I'm really looking forward to this. And I was thinking, oh, please don't be one of those films that lets us down. But from the moment it started till the moment it finished, I was invested. I was obsessed with it. And again, Ben, this will be the first thing I buy on Blu-ray. I'll sit at home and visually... Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, absolutely amazing direction from Scott Derrickson. One of the first things when the visuals really kick in, it's when Strange first goes to Nepal and he refuses to accept what the Ancient One is telling him about the spiritual realm. She then kind of pushes him and he goes flying backwards pretty much into the multiverse, and you've got all these trippy visuals that are like, they're mm-hmm. like being on LSD.
Yeah, like frankly. A Styx concert or something.
Something wacky like that. And then later on in the film, you have the battles, fight scenes between Benedict Cumberbatch as Strange and Mads Mikkelsen as Caecilius, where they're going around the streets of New York and all the buildings are folding in on each other. That's the bit that's very Inception-like.
Oh, gotcha.
Then there's a climactic battle where the good guys and bad guys are fighting, but the world is going in reverse as they're fighting it going forwards. Mm-hmm. It's all these really trippy visuals that you're there with your jaw hanging. And reviews prior to said that it was one of the best uses of 3D in a film, that you had to see it in 3D. So we did. We went and saw it in 3D. And I personally thought it was actually worth it. It's the first film I've seen in 3D since Star Wars, because I just don't care for the medium anymore. But I'm glad. I'm glad we did it this time. What do you think to the 3D?
I absolutely loved it. And I think, absolutely, I implore people to go and watch this in 3D. Just the way how the buildings twist, and even the buildings at one point are literally bending, like really malleable. And even, you know, obviously with the environment changing around them, they too have to adapt to the environment. So you do see a lot of Inception-style fighting on the walls or upside down. Absolutely incredible. And, you know, major props not only go to, obviously, visual effects, visual designers, but of course the stunt team as well. That was choreographed beautifully.
Yeah.
Isn't it refreshing that we've probably not seen, what was Inception, maybe 10 years old now, eight years? So it's quite a long time.
It's getting on a bit.
And it wasn't like, oh God, they're ripping them off. They just took that concept and used it perfectly. But the actual fight scenes were brilliant. And I've seen a lot of films recently. And even like when we talked about Avengers a year ago, that was millions and millions of pounds on the budget. It looked ropey. The intro we said on Age of Ultron looked terrible.
It did. The CGI was really poor.
There was nothing for me on this film where I was like, oh, that looks a bit shoddy or that looks a bit crap. And this isn't the budget of Avengers. Mm-hmm. This was done visually. It's perfect. It's an absolute masterpiece with visual. And I am a little bit blown away. I need to kind of catch my breath and be like, we've just seen this film, and I'm just kind of trying to reflect on what happened. But every fight scene, every kind of time you saw some fire, every time you saw the punch, the sound, it hit me. It was magnificent.
It was. But of course, the visuals wouldn't be worth a goddamn thing were there not a good story to link it to. And I really enjoyed the story. Some of the negative review. I don't really think there have been any negative reviews. The worst I've seen are middling ones, and the negatives that they pull out are that it's just another origin story. Yeah, of course it is, because it had to be. The character just couldn't exist in the universe. It's too weird a character. It had to be an origin story, and it's arguably the best one I've seen. I would put it probably with Ant-Man as being the most interesting origin story for a really out there concept for a superhero. Mm-hmm. I thoroughly enjoyed the story.
Yeah, and one thing I love about it as well, like the little quirks were still kept in, like we've seen in previous Marvel films, such as Ant-Man that you've just mentioned as well. There were still the quirks that people love to see in terms of comedy moments, and especially with Doctor Strange's cape of levitation as well. Wonderful scene where the cape beats up one of the bad guys as well. And it's literally, the only thing I can describe it is if, you know, you're sort of throwing something side to side really violently. And that captured it really, really well. I thought that was incredible.
I think it's the right amount of balance as well with the jokes. It was really well done. It wasn't every 5 minutes where it was too much like Deadpool, where it was like, oh, this was probably every 20 minutes there was a joke. And it really worked. And then it was serious again. Then you had that, like, I think he gave him a piece of paper with a name on it. He's like, what's this for? He's like, it's the Wi-Fi code. And it was just hilarious. Like, horse in my lap. But then it was straight back into the seriousness again. And it was just right.
It was. And I think Cumberbatch played the humour perfectly. And I really liked the way they did his character. He was quipping fairly often, but he didn't feel like a Tony Stark ripoff. That's the problem with the Marvel films. Whenever you have a little quippy character, you think, oh, he's just ripping off Tony again. He didn't, because when Tony Stark quips, he comes across as like the cool guy who just makes the little funny jokes. But when Doctor Strange was quipping, he was just coming across as the arrogant arsehole who's not as funny as he thinks he is. And it worked perfectly for the character. And then others played off him really well, especially Wong, who was really
Benedict
funny.
Benedict Wong, he was great. He was really, really great. And as well, I mean, Tilda Swinton as well. I mean, you guys know how much I love T-Swizzle. She is amazing. But the fact is, with her character, she played it with such calm and serenity, yet she was an absolute force to be reckoned with. And of course, spoiler alert, you find out that she actually gets a lot of her power from the dark arts, which some might say you could see her as a slight villain. So she's not fighting the good fight. But I thought, for me, Tilda Swinton was an absolute MVP.
There's a bit where the Ancient One and Doctor Strange are in the astral realm, and they're standing on that balcony towards the end of the film. And I don't know if it's just because Tilda Swinton has a kind of ethereal face, but there were bits where she looked CGI. I'd have to show it to you, I think, to point it out. There was a bit where it felt like they'd had to call her back in to do some extra dialogue, but she'd already grown her hair back, so they couldn't get her in for the reshoots, and they just used a CGI puppet of her. But it might not have been. It might just be because she's got one of those faces.
Like a Jim Henson puppet.
You know, I'm not having a go. Just, you know.
I need to watch that again. Because I didn't
I'll point it out to you. I'll show you. I'll show you when I see it. Mads Mikkelsen was in it, of course, as well, who we love, Mark, especially you and I.
He is amazing. As soon as he came on the screen, I was like, wow, I love him. And don't think I could ever hate him because I'm so infatuated with his character of Hannibal and everything else he's done till now. But he didn't feel like he was Hannibal. He broke away so different. And as a baddie, don't get me wrong, Hannibal's a great TV baddie, but this is a different type of baddie. And I was invested and I believed him. And I want to see him in more and more. I know we get him in Rogue One soon, but in this film, he really worked well.
He was great as the villain.
I thought he was good. I think with Marvel films, they struggle with their villains. I think truly the only truly great villain they've had so far in Marvel is Loki. And then you've got the lower end ones, like Darren Cross from Ant-Man wasn't that great a villain. Ronan the Accuser from Guardians wasn't that great a villain. I would put Mikkelsen's character, Kaecilius, somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
I think he was closer to Loki than those other guys, but he still wasn't amazing. And that wasn't his fault. That's because his character was very one note. His whole thing was he wanted to bring about the destruction of Earth by welcoming in Dormammu, this demon from a different universe, to basically swallow up Earth and end time. That was his raison d'etre. That's all he had going for him. He played it very well, and he played it dead seriously. It's the kind of thing that could come across silly in the hands of a lesser skilled actor, but he made himself seem like a real zealot, a real believer in this Dormammu, and he played it really well.
Do you know what, when I'm thinking about this film more and more now, it reminds me, and it has elements of kind of Batman Begins, that root story of it had that feel for it. It's like Marvel's take on Batman Begins, but obviously with a different character. That's the way it felt for me.
So
I'm absolutely buzzing to see the next one in a couple of years and see where it goes, because it's guaranteed we're getting a sequel. It's greenlit and we know what's happening.
So a spoiler alert there. Right towards the end of the film, there are two post-credit sequences. In the second one, you see Strange's colleague, Mordo, who had been training with him in Nepal as, you know, one of the good guys of the film. You see him realise that because the Ancient One had used this dark power, that everything he believed to be true wasn't true, and it's kind of turned him. And in this last post-credit scene, again, spoiler alert, he then reveals that he's basically going to take out all the sorcerers. Now, that shouldn't be that much of a spoiler to anyone, because if you knew anything of the Doctor Strange character, or if you'd done any research, you would know that Baron Mordo is the number one antagonist of Stephen Strange and has been since the 60s. So it's no surprise that Mordo has turned out to be bad. But did you think that post-credit sting worked?
It wasn't the best for me. Usually I wait, I sit there, we have 5-10 minutes of music, and then we get the boom.
Yeah,
it wasn't really done for me like that. I wish I didn't really stay. I wasn't that blown away by the ending.
I think it was just a bit of a filler, really. I mean, it was quite shocking to see. Obviously, we'd heard about Pangborn all throughout the film, and then for Mordo to take his power away as well was, you know, obviously very uncomfortable. But at the same time, I think uncomfortable for the fact that I don't think it quite gelled.
Yeah, I didn't see the point in it. One, because as I say, if you knew that Mordo in the books was a bad guy, it told you nothing you didn't already know. And two, because at the end of the film, before the credit sequences, he basically said to Strange, "I can't follow you on this path." So you knew he was going off on another direction. It seemed unnecessary. But what about the other one? Tell me about the other post-credit sequence.
Well, look at Gemma smiling here. Thor himself is there.
Wonderful.
And I didn't know this, which is really good. Yeah. Go on the opening night to see a film. You don't get spoilers and people ruin it for you. Wow.
Yeah. Brilliant stuff. Him and his big tank of beer and Doctor Strange topping it up. And
I love that little thing.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And as well, obviously, we got the mention of Loki and Odin. Mm-hmm. So, and I think, I don't know about you guys, but I kind of got the sense that perhaps we might see Steve in Thor 3.
That was my guess, because Strange asks Thor, "Why have you come to Earth and why have you brought Loki with you?" And Thor says, "Because I'm looking for my dad." And Strange says, "Okay, so if we find your dad, you'll piss off back to Asgard with you." And he goes, "Yeah." And he goes, "Okay, then I'll help you." So if he's saying he's going to help him, I'm guessing then he is going to be in the third Thor, which I'm more than happy about.
I'm too thumbs up.
I can't see why they would do it if they wasn't now. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty much done deal for me.
Let's hope so.
One negative that I wanted to talk about is I thought Rachel McAdams was underused. She plays Stephen Strange's love interest. She's one of the doctors at the hospital where Strange worked. And for me, she was used in pretty much exactly the same way that Natalie Portman was used in Thor, which was, you know, she was there to assist the hero, but not really have anything about herself, have no real character mm-hmm. about herself. They've developed Natalie Portman's character a little bit more in the second Thor film, and maybe they'll do that with Rachel McAdams' character. But for someone who is as talented, as brilliant an actress as she, I think they shortchanged her.
Oscar nominated as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree with you there. You know, obviously she's there as a former love interest of Doctor Strange. There could have been so much more to do with her, but then when you think about the story that we did see with the film, I don't know how she could have been shoehorned a little bit more, and that disappoints me. But yeah, it would have been nice to have a bit more courage, maybe a bit more strength to her character, a bit more strength to the story itself as well.
I think the sad part is that when she was on screen for that little time, she was great.
Yeah. She was.
You know, I didn't, again, see her as any of her previous characters, which is a credit to the acting ability, but I was really invested in her, and I thought, great, they're really good together, but it was just, it felt a bit shortchanged, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and you've got to say that the casting department absolutely killed it on this one. Marvel have done a great job in recent years in terms of casting, but in this film, Benedict Cumberbatch, Mads Mikkelsen, Tilda Swinton, Chiwetel Ejiofor, just an insane cast. Mark's smiling because he's thinking about how do I pronounce that.
I'm just thinking how great that cast is when you're just saying it one after another. Yeah, they're all absolutely perfect. And if you did say Mads Mikkelsen as a baddie in a Marvel film with Tilda Swinton, it is a little bit like, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then when you see it on screen, I know we've touched already on Tilda, but I love that actress anyway, and her previous work is outstanding, but for me today, just blew me away. Just absolutely, so much so that I don't know if she was CGI or real. We're going to have to go back now.
Is Tilda Swinton actually real?
I don't think she is. She's a real creature from space.
She is.
That's such a commitment. You're shaving your head, bicking your head. It's not even just like the V for Vendetta. This is the full Richard O'Brien, Crystal Maze look. And Ben's probably got a point. They've probably done some reshoots. And sorry, I've got a bit of a fringe growing back now.
Bit of a 5 o'clock shadow on the old noggin.
And I think the cast is so strong, but it's not really what you would call blockbuster actors. They're actors who are highly respected. Yeah. Actors who get put in, you know, Oscar-winning or Oscar-nominated dramas. They're not just the guys or guys and gals that they drag out for these blockbusters. It's such an interesting cast, as well as being a great one.
And that's what I think with Tilda. I always go straight back to, we need to talk about Kevin. That is the complete opposite of anything you'd ever put in a Marvel film. Yeah. So you've completely nailed it on the head there.
But remember, she's got the kookiness of what you see in Snowpiercer.
Oh, great film.
You know, and this is why I love her so much. You know, it's a side of her that I haven't seen before in her career. She's never really done the big budget blockbuster kind of films.
No,
I think
really.
The biggest one I can think of maybe Trainwreck, where she was a supporting actor. But that's besides the point, though. She's hopefully more people are going to be more aware of her. That, like, they should be already. Mm-hmm. But she nailed it.
I'll tell you what, guys, I'm ready to wrap this up if you guys are.
Yeah, me too.
I'm going to... God, this is a tough one because I always listen back afterwards and think I should have done more, but I'm going to give it a very, very, very high 8.
High 8? Wow, okay.
Because the 3D alone, which is something I don't credit, you know, Avatar was the last one I made the effort to pay extra in the cinema, and we've seen so many companies now jumping on and just literally charging that extra £3 or £4. You go in and it's all bad and you just think, I didn't need that, especially Captain America and stuff that you do not need. But this is the one that if you're listening to this review and you haven't seen the film, especially our friends across the pond, please pay the extra £2 or £3, please, because the 3D is outstanding. And because of all the visual effects, the acting, the cast that Ben just mentioned that shouldn't be so good altogether in this film as such different roles, it's a high 8. So, Ben, what are you thinking?
I'm going to give it an 8 as well. Probably not a high 8. I was thinking high 7, but now we've talked about it, probably an 8. I'm pretty sure I gave Ant-Man an 8. And I would say I enjoyed this as much as that. I thought Ant-Man was great. I thought this was great. If you're going to judge Marvel films, it makes sense to judge them against one another. And this is up there with their recent best. So 8 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, I'm going to echo you guys. It's an 8. I think it's too good of a film to be a 7. It's not quite ready yet for a 9. Maybe on a few rewatches, perhaps it'll hit that level. But I think really strong film. I'm very excited to see what other people's reactions are as well.
So overall, Doctor Strange, 8 out of 10. Prize giveaway time. We used to call it competition, but you know, let's change it up a bit. Prize giveaway time. We're in with the big boys now, Sony. So if you listen to our last episode, the new film Inferno, we got a brand new bundle which included t-shirts, chargers, watches, a house, car, a book, It had loads of stuff. Didn't have a house or car, but the rest it all had. And the question I put out there was, basically, who wrote the book for the film? Do you know that?
I do. It was Dan Brown.
Brilliant. And mm-hmm. the winner on Facebook is Michael Williams. So he'll be getting one of those bundles from Sony sent right to him. So thank you very much to Sony. And hopefully we can work together in the future. Sony's pretty good, isn't it? Let's be honest.
It is.
But let's not forget the big boys as well. Universal. Yeah. They threw in their prize to the mix as well. They don't want to go unnoticed. Ouija, the new film, The Origin of Evil, which is supposed to be really, really good. I haven't got around to seeing it yet. You won't know this, but basically the question I put out there to win a bundle from them, which had a T-shirt and it had mm-hmm. loads of stuff, a hat, it had a hoodie. Who directed the film? If you know, I will give you a bundle. No,
sorry.
It's Mike Flanagan. And the winner is Abigail Moore. But also we put out another competition from Warner Brothers. Look at these names. You know what I mean?
Why can't you just casually slip it? Not
just
Sony,
Warner Brothers.
Universal,
you know,
Warner
crazy. Stalk's a brand new animation. Supposed to be really, really good. Haven't got around to seeing it, but it's one of those ones I will definitely. What we said is, if you leave us an iTunes review, I like this, you know, you've got to do a bit more than just send in an answer. And there's been loads. Thanks very much. Samantha Thomas 34 has given us a 5-star rating. That does help as well if we do any more competitions like this. Give us a 5-star, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
And she will get this bundle. Now, if you listen to our last episode, there's T-shirts, hoodies, hats, stickers, watches, pens, you name it, it's got it in that bundle. So thanks again. So let's move on, okay? I like this iTunes thing. I like that. So what I want to do is give away another bundle. But this bundle is from our good friends at Warner Brothers. But it's an iconic film moments DVD set. Now, you might have seen we ran this on Twitter as well, but get those exclusive covers that are, I think they're for HMV. They've got amazing, iconic sort of artwork, which is exclusive. The whole set we're giving away. So there's Argo, 2001 Space Odyssey, Matrix, Mad Max, Argo, 300, said Argo twice, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Seven, Dirty Harry, True Romance, and there's loads and loads of them.
What about Argo?
We're going to give a set away to the next person that leaves us an iTunes rating. 5-star rating on iTunes. That is a huge bundle. And I'm not joking. They're 15 quid each in HMV. I looked at the weekend. So times that by 10.
It's a lot of dollar bills there.
Hell of a lot.
Yeah.
But that's not it. Do you remember our good friends Headshot Clothing?
I do.
They've got a brand new design out for The Thing. The masterpiece, The Thing. And it's stunning. It's absolutely awesome. I'm not just saying this. They are a very good friend. They recently got married.
Yeah.
Which is unreal.
Oh,
what's
in
ours? If like,
because it's nice.
You're saying it like, aw.
No. I was like, get married. No, I was like, no.
Aw, I want to marry Headshot.
Maybe I do.
Okay. But this design, they've given us the first one again. So we're going to get that out to the winner.
Mm-hmm.
You can choose the size. So the winner will be contacted. Let's make it really easy because these guys deserve a lot of love. Who directed the movie The Thing? That's pretty easy, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is.
And everyone knows it's John Carpenter, so you know what I mean.
Brilliant.
you know, let us know.
But who can it be?
But also check out Headshot, honestly, on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, because they are awesome and they've given us loads over
the time.
They've
been good
They've
to
been
us.
There since the start. They're not just jumping on the bandwagon like mm-hmm. Sony and people. They're there from the start.
Or me.
Can we throw up a picture onto the old Instagram and Twitter of that design so everyone can see
it? It's absolutely stunning. And we'll announce the winner on the next episode.
It's now time for movie mass debate. So I'm sure you guys know what the general gist of this is, but what we do is we pick a name out of the ditch of foam. Right?
I like it.
And from there, what we do then is we each come back with our favourite performance of a film that they have done. So on the last episode, it was Ben's pick, and Ben picked out Angelina Jolie.
Mm-hmm.
The very one. So I'm going to throw this out to Mark first, and I want to hear what your favourite performance of Angelina Jolie is.
I'm just going to start by saying that since we've done this new topic, and I like it, it's really interesting in hearing, you know, everyone go away and study this. Yeah. Angelina Jolie has not done many good films. Yeah. And I'm going to say it now, and it's not trying to badmouth, but it's a lot of shite.
Mm-hmm.
Like, usually I'm like, oh, Stallone, like, how do I break it down to this and this?
Tom Hanks as well.
Mm-hmm.
Massive. But for me, there's not a lot to choose from, and I went with Clint Eastwood's Changing.
Okay, I've never seen that film.
Me neither.
It's not a bad film at all. And again, I can't really praise her to like the extent we go to for some of the previous people we've masturbated over because it really is a case of it's pretty good, but it's not even like, for me, an Oscar-winning performance. Mm. Mm-hmm. The film, she plays a character called Christine who loses her son, who's abducted. Now, I don't want to spoil it too much if you haven't seen it, but do watch it because Clint Eastwood is a great filmmaker. Yeah. I'm sure you'll respect a lot of his work.
Except for American Sniper.
Ugh. I've never seen it.
Yeah. And talking to invisible people on chairs as well.
Yeah.
So her son goes missing and basically another child turns up 5 months later and insists it's her son. And everyone is like saying, no, this is your son. She's like, no, it's not. He doesn't look the same. He's different. He's different height and everything. And she wouldn't accept that it's their son. So the pressure is put on her to basically accept that this person that's shown up as an imposter is her son.
Mm.
So all the way film, you see this mother like not be able to kind of accept this child into her life because she knows the whole time, but then she starts questioning herself, is it her mentally? So she puts in this really good performance. She's not just this person walking around with a gun shooting people, which she's done in a lot of her other films, mm-hmm. or easy kind of silly beer and pizza films. This is a very serious story, so it is great to see how much work she puts into this. But we see the signs coming through that she starts to doubt herself, but she's always consistent that at the end, it's not my son. You know, this is not my son. She doesn't love him. She doesn't have that bond with him. I think she even goes as far as going to the dentist to check if the records are the same because he had a certain, like, extraction done. And she does everything she can to kind of prove it's not. But everyone starts saying she's mental and that she's wrong and that she should accept that son is, because why else would this son turn up? So it's a really kind of psychological, really good testing performance from her where she really gives a lot. Like I said, a lot different to her normal popcorn blockbuster action films. I will spoil it, but it isn't her son. And later on down the line, we actually learn that the son had been taken and we find out that the son is still on the run.
Oh, God.
It's dark. So we don't see that big kind of finished payoff of,
She found the artifact.
Like Gone Girl or something where we get this payoff.
Yeah.
We don't, and it's left open. And we, over the credits, we get the whole story as normal. But Clint Eastwood gets a really strong performance and serious performance out of her. But I'll be honest, guys, it wasn't an easy one to mass debate over. And it's serious. Mm. I was literally like, there's a lot of shite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Normally you guys would be like, oh, yeah, I've seen that and this and that. It's a difficult one. It's been a tough one.
Yeah.
Go for it, Ben.
I've gone with Hackers, which I'll be brutally honest with you, is a piece of shit. It's an atrocious film. It is an absolute holocaust of a film. But she's really good in it. Yeah. It was her first lead role. It was her breakthrough performance. And she's great playing this kind of hipster Generation X hacker type. She's the only notable or worthy thing in the whole film. She's great, but I actually rewatched this. I watched it the last week because to be able to talk about it, I wanted to remind myself of it, and by God, it's awful. It came out in 1995, and even then it seemed dated, so it looks positively prehistoric now. So the bits of them hacking, you see these kind of 3D models on the computer screen of them sort of whizzing around all this data that's nonsense. It doesn't happen. It's never happened. It looks like Tron. And this film is from 1995, you know. And all of the hackers inexplicably rollerblade.
Everyone knows. Futuristic activity exactly. That we'll be doing.
Everyone knows that's what hackers do. Hackers bloody love rollerblading.
Next time you're on the street, you see some little kid go past, future hacker. Sign him up now. Get him onto Microsoft. Come on, you've got a job for you.
The film is absolute dog shit. And Johnny Lee Miller plays the main role. And he is the slowest typist I've ever seen. His typing speed is about...
Like one finger special.
Yeah, it's about three words a minute. And you think, you wouldn't be a very good hacker, pal.
wouldn't even get through his 3 month probation as a receptionist.
It really is an atrocious film, but she's very good in it. Mm. It's no wonder that she then went on to bigger and better things. She has undeniable star quality. In that film, you're looking at it and thinking, you have the X factor. You could tell she was going to break through, and she obviously did, and then went on to win an Oscar later on.
Yeah, okay. Well, mine's a film I don't think a lot of people have heard of, and it was sort of during the period of the mid-90s after Hackers, but it was before she really broke through. Mm. So my choice is a film called Gia.
Mm-hmm.
So what she plays is a very famous supermodel in the 1980s called Gia Carangi. Rocketed to fame very, very quickly. She's a beautiful, beautiful woman. However, she kind of spiraled a bit out of control due to an addiction to heroin, which ultimately led to her death due to AIDS complications. I think this is the best Angelina Jolie performance because it shows her at her most raw and visceral best. She really threw herself into the role, so she obviously went to some very dark places to achieve the performance. And of course, she's gone on record saying she's battled with personal demons herself. And I think this was a mirror of what she was going through at the time. So we see her absolutely at the most rock bottom. But however, I think it's one of the most believable performances that she's ever portrayed. The scene where she's, all right, it's probably one for the lads, a bit blue, this one, but she is standing absolutely stark naked in a corridor, basically asking her...
There we go, yeah. 1 hour, 26 minutes.
She's declaring her love for her girlfriend, who's a photographer called Linda, and she's just basically bearing her soul, you know, so to speak. Obviously, she's absolutely billy bollock naked.
Completely billy bollocks.
Was she with Billy at that time?
She was. Yeah, she was. At this point of time, she was. But she was... absolutely just pleading this woman to stay with her and not leave that room at that time. Another point is when she decides to choose heroin over her girlfriend and just the non-carelessness of her actions afterwards. And it was utterly heartbreaking as well. I mean, she should have got a lot more awards for this film than, say, for example, Girl Interrupted, which is another good film. But for me, I think this was the pinnacle of her career. I don't think she's ever been able to achieve this height of realism when it comes to previous performances.
The reason why she wasn't awarded for this is because it wasn't a theatrical film, it was a TV movie.
Television, yeah.
So you've kind of cheated there, Gemma. I'm upset
contract.
At you, really.
You can get it on DVD.
But people still speak highly of that performance.
Yeah,
that was
incredible.
Hackers was her first lead role in a Hollywood movie, but this was the one where people actually stood up and took notice of her acting talent. That's what then got her big meaty roles afterwards, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like a very heart-wrenching tale.
It is.
But I do have a little question. Is there any scenes when you see her getting it on with the other girl? I just want to know. I just want to know. Is there any lesbian scenes?
15 minutes, 23. Go check it out.
Wow. I know what I'm doing tonight. On with the masturbate anyway.
Yeah.
Social media. Quite a few joined in on this one. Mm-hmm. Ben Fenlon has said she's definitely worth masturbating over. Salt. Salt for me was a ridiculous cinema. Buy some popcorn, have some beer, and just forget anything that goes on in the world and just focus on this stupid over the top.
I think a lot of people that I've spoken to about Angelina Jolie, they often do say Salt is a really good film. I've not seen
me
it.
Me neither. I haven't seen it.
But there's... someone's praising it.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Dillon has said Wanted.
That film's cack.
Absolutely dreadful. But they did say as well, check out Unbroken because she's very good at directing in that film. Mm. And I know a lot of people talk very highly of
Jack
her.
Jack O'Connell, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
At Vintage GT, Girl Interrupted, spellbinding performance.
Agree with that.
Christopher Brody has said The Bone Collector.
Is that Denzel Washington? Or...
it is her and Denzel, but yeah. I've not seen it myself,
me
but
either.
I'm sure it's very good. And to finish with, Chris Duck has said The Good Shepherd, which is another one. See?
There we go.
I need to open my eyes up to more performances from her because I'm just a bit ignorant.
Of all the films that we've mentioned, the three of us and the people on social media, I've only seen two of them.
I'm surprised no
I've
one
seen
said...
Wanted and... oh, no, three. I've seen Wanted, Girl Interrupted, and then Hackers.
And how did no one say Mr. and Mrs. Smith?
Because it's shit.
Mr. and Mrs. Shit.
That's two now. They're good, but don't do another.
Right. I reached my quota already.
I am in the mood. I've said it before. I'm up for it again.
Okay. So you're going to the Ditch of Fame then?
It is your turn to pick from the Dish of Destiny.
The Dish of Destiny.
Are you going to bring a new name each episode?
I am.
I like that.
I am indeed, yeah. Right, so. Oh.
Who have we got?
On the next Movie Masturbate, we got Will Ferrell.
Oh, yeah!
Woo! So much variety of performances. God, what's it going to be?
So stick around for the next episode, Will Ferrell. So the last episode, it was my choice, which is always very nice. So I decided to go for the 1995 Bryan Singer-directed film, The Usual Suspects. So for those of you who are a bit unaware of what the plot's all about, come to the right place. So I'm going to tell it to you. So basically, Usual Suspects is about a group of criminals that have been thrown together at a random police lineup after a hijacking of a truck full of gun parts. Turns out none of them had any involvement in it. So what they do is they plan revenge against the police. So it all goes to plan. However, a mysterious presence comes into the fold who is only known as Kaiser Soze. Each of the criminals involved has wronged Soze in the past. They're all blackmailed into paying him back. So after a boat explosion, which we see at the beginning of the film, leaves a number of men dead, but only one of the criminals involved in the plan, who's Verbalkind, played by Kevin Spacey, must give evidence and relive what happened during that time.
Nicely done.
Pretty good.
It's not Ben quality, but I think I'm there.
But it's definitely better than me.
Whee! So I'm going to throw this over to Ben first. Mm-hmm. So obviously it's always been in the top 250 of the IMDb pages, but we don't really care about that. Our opinion is the one that matters. Yeah. So I want to throw it to you.
I bloody love this film. It's one of those that on any given day, if I was doing my top five or top 10 films of all time, it could make the list. So we do our top five of all time every year. We redo it. Mm-hmm. And maybe next time it'll be in there. It's that good. It's always knocking on the door. It's a phenomenally directed film. It looked brilliant. Singer knocked it out of the park. I think it was only his third theatrical film.
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, and he's absolutely brilliant. It's, you know, because it's a thriller and it has a big, big old twist ending that, spoiler alert, we're gonna talk about, I'm sure. Because it has this big old twist, and the tension and, you know, the misdirection is all built up beautifully by Singer, and then it hits you with a gut punch. The revelation, spoiler alert, the revelation that Verbalkind, Kevin Spacey, is in fact Kaiser Soze, is not only a brilliant swerve, it's the way it's delivered. Because Verbalkind is, I think he has cerebral palsy, he walks like with a limp and stuff like that. And you see him leaving the police station in the last couple of minutes of the film, walking down the street with his limp. And as he continues to walk, the limp gradually just disappears. Oh, and he gets into the car driven by his mate, Mr. Kobayashi,
yeah.
Who is, it's clearly a Japanese name, and it's played by Pete Postlethwaite, who is the least Japanese man
that's
ever
lived. We'll go into this later.
And then it's at that point you realise, holy shit,
yeah,
he was Kaiser Soze all along. It's one of those where your jaw just drops. You're like, it's sometimes twists can feel like a cheat. It feels like a bait and switch, like you've been sold a bill of goods. What you were watching, it turns out that's not what you were actually watching. But this one, it feels so earned and so right that you kind of punch the air like, yes, that's a great twist. I believe it. I get it. Superb.
Yeah. Mark, what do you think?
Everything he said. Next. No, absolutely outstanding. I didn't realise it was so early into Bryan Singer's career. I can't believe it. Mm. And you kind of, obviously we know him now as the X-Men guy, and it's a shame he doesn't do more roles that don't involve the X-Men, and we can just see him do some more serious, decent thrillers and action films, because he nails it in every scene. But it's this, the ensemble cast, man, like Del Toro.
Oh,
how much do we all love this guy?
Yeah, what the fuck?
I flip you for real.
Stephen Baldwin.
Mm-hmm.
He's incredible in
this. Who I get told I look like sometimes.
Oh, I wouldn't say that out loud.
Kevin Pollak. Very good, funny guy who's done a lot of work recently with Kevin Smith and stuff.
Yeah, he's got a couple of podcasts on the go, Kevin Pollak. He was a stand-up comedian before he was an actor, and he is brilliant. He's kind of the unsung hero of this film for me.
Pete Postlethwaite, who we just talked about, he's a local boy. He lives in Church Stretton. Well, lived in Church Stretton. Yeah. And again, it's probably his best performance. Like, absolutely outstanding. And it's one of those actors that I've not really taken... It's not like a shine to. I've just not taken a notice of enough of his work. Mm-hmm. He's always that kind of background character. He's a little role. But in this, it was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. But we're going to talk about it in more detail. The Oscar winner himself for this film.
Oh, my God.
The one and only Kevin Spacey. We love this guy. I can talk for both of you, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Outstanding. Yeah. Doesn't really do a bad film anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, outstanding. All these
I don't
amazing...
know. Nine Lives recently came out.
Oh, God, yeah. The one about the cat.
Oh, God.
Jesus.
Until that moment, we had this, not just good movie actor, but TV as well. You know, this guy can do everything. But this film, for me, might be the top of the pile. Mm-hmm. Not just the narration that we're so used to from this guy as well, because he does it on American Beauty. His voice is perfect. To talk over any film, you're straight away sort of captivated in what's going on. But his performance from the start to finish, wow. And when Ben just said about this kind of punch going, bam, this is the twist. And sometimes like Sixth Sense, everyone talked about that. This is the best twist I've ever seen in a film that's got me.
Yeah.
But the best thing about doing this rewatch is I haven't seen it for a long time, and I obviously knew what was coming up. The little hints you get throughout the film that just keep tapping and going, how the fuck did I not notice?
I think that's one of the strengths of this film. You know, in a nutshell, I absolutely love this film. Mm-hmm. One of the great things about this film, a lot of films that you see with twists, you just don't tend to go back and rewatch. This is a film where the clues are already littered right in front of you. From the very first moment you see Verbalkin sitting at the police desk and just scanning all across the billboard with all of these paper cuttings, photo mug shots, even down to the make of the chalkboard. Things like that. It's when you realise that you can almost start playing detective. You can pick up on all the things he says about being in a barbershop quartet in Chicago, Illinois.
Yeah.
Redford, you know, there was a particular criminal that was an orca fat whale, you know, just little things like that.
Like Kobayashi was under was the brand of the mug. It was on the bottom of the mug.
But it also goes to show just how cold and calculating Verbalkin, a.k.a. Kaiser Soze, really is. To just, he had probably, what, about 30 seconds until the police inspector who was interviewing him was there, just and for him to kind of start telling the story. In that short space of time, he managed to come up with a story that even now, when you think about it, did it actually happen?
Mm.
What was real and what wasn't real? And I think this is a film that rightfully so should be rewatched, and it should be acknowledged, and it shouldn't just be a one-watch film. This is a film you can watch again.
It does. It rewards rewatching. Now, I'm going to shock you here. I don't think Kevin Spacey is very good in this. And I'm obviously in the minority because he won a damn Oscar for it.
Yeah.
But I think he overacts. So there's a bit when he's being interrogated and the policeman played by Chaz Palminteri is, you know, really going at him. And he starts kind of fake crying, and it doesn't feel real. But that said, because he's acting, he's pretending to be Verbalkin. Mm-hmm. You know, he is Kaiser Soze pretending to be Verbalkin. So it doesn't matter.
So he has to kind of oversell it.
Exactly. So it doesn't. So to me, it comes across as bad acting. But he the character is playing a role. It's not just Kevin Spacey playing a role. The character is as well. So it's kind of okay that it's hammy and that it's over the top, because that would make sense. Because he's the character of Kaiser Soze is not a professional actor. So his acting isn't going to be great. So it kind of works. But he grates on me a little. I love the film otherwise. But I think he's been significantly better in a hell of a lot of other films.
Okay.
I love
it. He's a bit much for me in this.
No, it's one of my... For me, personally, I absolutely... You know, if we mass debate over him, he'll be high up there because... God, I suppose, you've got to look at his acting as an actor who's not trying to be the person.
It's like an Inception.
How do you do that?
It's layers upon layers.
Yeah. Wow.
But for me, one of my favourite things about this film is the fact that the chemistry between the five criminals is unbelievably strong. And it's, I know we joke about synergy, but this is but this is where it works as well. And it's very hard to pick a weak, well, obviously with Kevin Spacey you said, but for me it's hard to pick a weak performance. Mm. And I think the star of it all for me is Benicio Del Toro.
Yeah.
He's unbelievable. And what I love about him in this film as well, he intentionally made sure that nobody could understand what he was saying.
Yeah.
A lot of the times, a lot of the outtakes were included within the film. So especially the bit where you go, I flip you. someone says, in English, please. And that was completely ad-libbed.
Yeah.
That was not part of the script. And of course, the very famous scene where they do line up for the very first time, which was, of course, an outtake as well.
And that, because they were all cracking up during the lineup because they were really just taking the piss. And apparently Benicio del Toro kept farting, which is what was making them laugh. It was supposed to be this deadly serious scene. But it's apparently Singer got really angry with them for not, you know, pulling their shit together. But in the end, he realised that it kind of showed that camaraderie and he kept that in the film.
And that's gold. Like, I sometimes don't want to know things like that because I just thought how well they look and how the chemistry is so well. And they all start cracking up and there's little jokes and you think... There's not a weak link, like you said, and that's pretty good going for they're not really many actors into their career at that point.
No.
They're all quite early days
and
for them.
Yeah. Not only that as well. I mean, Stephen Baldwin was known for playing wacky roles, like my personal favourite classic, Biodome, which is so good. But this is one of the most serious roles that he played, and I think as well he was a bit worried that he was going to be typecasted in his career. So for him to play this particular role was a perfect choice. But yeah, I mean, you know, give me your keys, okay? Because I can wonder fuck.
I read with Del Toro, the reason why he did that kind of unintelligible accent is because when he read the script, he realised that the character had no agency. Fenster, his character, existed for one purpose, and that was to die. He's the first one of them to die, and it's to prove a point that Soze isn't to be fucked with.
Yeah.
So he read this and was like, okay, if the whole point of my character is to die, I've nothing to work with. So he thought, right, I'm going to imbue some character of my own into it, and that's why he did this accent thing, just to give something memorable to a character who was just there to die. And he is the most memorable character. It's the first thing I think of when I think of this film. Is Fenster.
Even when you see him sort of walking out of the shop going one way and then quickly diverting the other way going, whoops, here comes the popo. It's absolutely fantastic. But again, I mean, this is just one thing out of a many plethora of things which is so great about this film. But for me, and I loved his work in everything he did, but who was thinking to make Pete Postlethwaite a Japanese businessman?
Yeah.
I didn't know that Cardiff was a place in Tokyo. You learn something new every day.
Just go down the road, turn left.
Yeah. Again, though, you know, I've thought about this quite a bit, and I think it's ridiculous that, you know, Pete Postlethwaite is cast as a Japanese person. But again, because he made up the term Kobayashi, because he saw it on the bottom of the mug, again, it's not miscasting then, is it, if he made it up? So you're kind of, that's kind of the out there. That's kind of the loophole.
Because you can imagine this is all through Verbal's eyes as well. Mm-hmm. So did he associate Kobayashi with his business partner, who's probably from somewhere like, I don't know, Iowa or something? And yes, I completely agree with you, because I was thinking that on the way up here today.
Yeah. What is it about these films, right? So I just checked, 1995. Mm. You've also got films around that time. You've got stuff like Pulp Fiction. You've got all these films. Yeah. What is it about these films? I also think of stuff like Nicolas Cage in Con Air. They've got that 90s look. It's the tint. Yeah. It's the way the camera is. Mm-hmm. It's a shame we've lost that, because as soon as you watch this film, you think 90s. Yeah. You don't think 80s. You don't think recent. Bryan Singer doesn't seem to me as a 90s director. I always see him as a modern day filmmaker. Mm-hmm. I've kind of missed that. It sounds weird, but the tint, the colour, the film, the way it's done, it's got that nice kind of feel to it.
I found that when they were interrogating them at the beginning, just after the lineup, and it had this bright light just shining above the criminals. And it is gorgeous, and you really don't see that anymore.
We don't get it anymore.
Mm-hmm. It's partially it's down to the cinematography, but it's also partially down to the medium that they use, because we're in a digital age now. Yeah. So people don't make movies on celluloid very often at all anymore. Mm-hmm. It's like when Tarantino did it with Hateful Eight, it was this big thing that he'd actually filmed on actual film rather than digitally. And it doesn't look the same. It doesn't look as good. It's technically better and crisper and clearer, but it doesn't have that feel.
No.
It doesn't have that movie feel.
And I miss it. And this is a great example. Pulp Fiction is the one, isn't it? When you think of, like, even the poster, the colouring, the red doesn't seem like a bright red. Mm-mm. But the film itself, the colours, I miss it. Mm. And everyone's like, oh, well, you need 4K, you need the latest HD, so you get it. I don't want all that.
I think this new technology is I can see the benefits, but in some ways it's made it worse. Like, I remember when I first got an HD TV and I watched a football game. It was a Man United game. And then afterwards they were interviewing Wayne Rooney, and I didn't need to see him in that much clarity. It was too much. I didn't need to see the pores and spots on Wayne Rooney's face. It was too much.
But also, they don't look real anymore. When I'm watching HD and it looks that crisp, when you're watching like some commentary or some person on telly, it's too real. And I turn it off on my TV, these filters now, whatever it is, like enhanced mode and engine and all this crap. I want just the 90s looking films again. And I want that Tarantino. We joke about Kevin Smith, but Chase and Amy, all those films that came out around that time, you instantly go, that's mid-90s.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
I know it's going off topic a bit, but it just makes me realise.
No.
It does look so good.
It needs to be said, definitely.
Well, let's talk about Gabriel Byrne for a minute. So he played Keaton, who was one of the main roles. Something I read recently is Bryan Singer kept it from the characters who Kaiser Soze actually was. It was only Kevin Spacey who knew that he was Soze. The rest of them didn't know. And Gabriel Byrne truly believed that his character Keaton was Kaiser Soze. And apparently he didn't find out he wasn't until the premiere. So he watched the film. Then it turns out Kevin Spacey's Kaiser Soze. Gabriel Byrne took Bryan Singer outside and shouted at him for half an hour, apparently. Like, you know, you've misled me. I thought I was Soze and all this kind of stuff. That's crazy.
Awesome. Yeah. So he had done all the filming of the whole reveal.
Well, even at the end, when Verbal's breaking down and, you know, quote-unquote confessing that Keaton was Kaiser Soze all along, he's done the shot, so absolutely. He's led to believe that he was Soze himself.
You'd be fuming.
I would be pissed. I would be going to my
union. Are you ready? Are you ready to come to the premiere? Yeah. Sit down. This is the one. This is going to make a lot of money. People are going to still skip the end. We'll be talking about this in 20 years' time. Sit down. Get ready. What? Spacey's there like that. Do you know, like a Shawn Michaels screw job? Just sitting there like, yeah, I knew the whole time. I knew.
But again, we don't see enough Gabriel Byrne anymore as well. But no. this is a cracking role from him as well. Really great role.
What has happened to him? Because he was a big deal in the mid-90s.
He was. He did a few big roles. And I think the last thing I remember him doing was like End of Days, I think. With Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That was atrocious.
I only remember that because I remember watching the wrestling like in the late 90s, early 2000s. And they promoted it heavily. Mm. And I only remember it from that. But I can't remember him being in a lot of things recently. Which
in
is
the
rushing.
Last 6 years on IMDb, there's nothing you'd have heard of.
He's gone off piste.
Yeah, he's done absolutely nothing, which is a shame because. Yeah.
Mm. Well, also, we do get to see a very early Gus Fring from Breaking Bad as well.
Yes, Giancarlo Esposito. Mm. I completely forgot he was in this until I rewatched it.
And he's now sort of not just doing Breaking Bad, but he's also been the voice. He's done a voice in the Jungle Book as well. I think he's got quite a lot of things there lined up as well, which is great to see him sort of in a bit of a younger light as well.
Yeah.
When you think it's weird, isn't it? When the cast is that strong, we've obviously got Del Toro and Spacey who are doing everything now and owning the world.
Yeah.
But Baldwin, we've not seen much from either.
Well, he was in Big Brother, wasn't he? Went a bit too lolly.
Well, that's what I mean. He's
proper churchy, isn't he? He's very, very right wing and very churchy.
Yeah.
But it is crazy how one can have such a successful career, go on to such big things. Mm. And the other's just literally eating cake on Big Brother. I mean, like what? How does one do so well and go in Sicario and these amazing masterpieces and one's sitting in a diary room talking about how he wants to eat?
It's like before you were saying that he was worried about getting typecast. Yeah. He should be worried about getting cast.
He's an absolute nutter now, isn't he? Complete nutter.
Allegedly. He would sue us. He needs money. If he's going on Big Brother, he'll take us down.
I mean, with this as well, I mean, obviously we've got the look right. The score is absolutely beautiful. Mm. The boat scene at the very end, I think the climatic scene of what we're seeing right at the very beginning at San Pedro, executed perfectly as well. I think this is almost like a, you know, if there was ever a book on how to execute a thriller beautifully, this scene would be at the very forefront of the book.
It's fantastic. And the script by Christopher McQuarrie is so crisp. Mm. It's a beautifully written script, and quite rightly, he won the Oscar for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a fantastic script.
It's nice when an Oscar is deserved, and the winner is justified in every way. Most of the times we moan, oh, how the hell did they shun so-and-so?
Yeah.
No one else should even get anywhere near. They shouldn't have nominated anyone. It should have just been the nominations are Matey Boy. Winner, Matey Boy. Done. No one would have argued.
It would have been a good day at the bookies, wouldn't it? But Christopher McQuarrie previously worked for a detective agency.
Yeah.
So it's very much influenced on how criminals and police officers spoke to each other, which makes the script so beautiful to listen to.
Apparently one of the people he worked with at that agency was a chap called Kaiser Sume.
Brilliant.
And when he wrote the script initially, that was what the bad guy's name was, Kaiser Sume. And then he showed it to his ex-boss, and he went, I don't really want to be associated with this evil man who killed his own family. So he changed the name to Kaiser Soze. And apparently, Soze, in Turkish, means talkative, which fits the fact that it's verbal Kint who is Kaiser Soze.
And the clues were already there. And that's the wonderful thing about this film. Like, if you really start taking the layers off and really going into the film very, very deep, the clues are there right in front of us.
And there's websites where people have gone to every second of the film and said it, and you'll just be like,
Even at, like, just little things at the beginning. He talks about when he was a kid, you know, when he pissed, it was very snotty and lumpy.
Yeah.
And at the very beginning scene as well, you see Kaiser Soze take a piss, and that is also very lumpy as well.
And it's
tiny little clues like that. When you go back to watching, like, it was there all along. How did we miss this?
Indeed.
Let's score it.
Let's wrap it up,
Who wants to go first?
You go first, Emma. It was your pick.
No worries. For me, it is a 9 out of 10. Mm-hmm. It is possibly the greatest film noir I think that has ever come about. It is certainly, in my opinion, this is the greatest twist ever portrayed in film. I'm sure a lot of people disagree with me out there, but for me, this is just, it demonstrates just how wonderful filmmaking in the 90s was. 9 out of 10.
I will just say 9 out of 10. It is amazing. It is beautiful. It's perfect. It's great. Every person gives a performance that deserves an Oscar.
Yeah.
9 out of 10.
Ditto. 9 out of 10. It's an absolutely fantastic movie. I absolutely love it. Arguably Bryan Singer's best work. He did a film, I think it was the year or two before this, called Apt Pupil. I don't know if you've seen that.
I've never seen it, but I've heard of it.
An absolutely brilliant film. And I would kind of, and it didn't get the coverage that Usual Suspects got, but I would put that up there with this. But it's a 9 out of 10.
Excellent. So, Usual Suspects gets 9 out of 10. Mm-hmm. And it's Ben's turn.
It is my turn. So, in recent times on this podcast, we in the rewatch, we'll do a lot of great films, classics, and what we'll also do is a lot of terrible, awful films that are fun to talk about.
No.
Don't worry, I'm not going down that route.
Not for a while.
What we haven't really touched upon yet, I don't think, are controversial films. Ooh, so I want us to have a watch of a controversial film. So on the next episode, what we're going to rewatch is Crash.
Oh, wait, which one?
I'm not talking about the god-awful Paul Haggis film with the revolutionary message that racism is bad. I'm talking about the David Cronenberg film about people who get sexually aroused by car
Robert
crashes.
California.
Well, this is it, you see. This is going to be the thing. So it stars James Spader. It's going to be hard to watch him as this kind of sexual deviant when we know him as Robert California from season 8 or whatever it is of The Office. But it's going to be a very interesting one because it was incredibly controversial when it came out, based on a J.G. Ballard book. And yeah, it's a very, very interesting movie.
So after last episode, Starmageddon, it's time for a brand new quiz.
Mm-hmm.
How excited are you guys?
Pretty excited.
I'm super excited.
Mm. A lot of pressure on you as well, because I won't lie now. When we did your review, there was a couple of things that were big for me. One was coming up with a game show. I think that's an important way to win respect, but also the viewers, you know, the listeners.
Yeah.
They're really going to be bought into a good game show. I think that's crucial.
Yeah.
And a rewatch choice. And you nailed both last time. So
cool.
I feel that, like, you might have just done that to get the contract, and now you're just going to sort of be just to sit back and think, just, oh, whatever.
We'll increase control now. That's
so
it.
So I think you've got to...
You've got to keep your game up. You've set a high bar, and you've got to stick with it.
I have. So
because contracts can be ripped up.
Yes. What have you got for us?
Basically, the rules of the game is we're going to be celebrating props in films. Now, I know that sounds really basic, like a basic bitch would say that, but I ain't no basic bitch. I'm a skip to the ender. And basically, what we're going to be doing is, as I'm Games Master, I'm going to be giving the guys 5 different types of props. So the first prop I give is going to be quite hard. So therefore, that's going to be 5 points. The next prop's going to be slightly easier. So that's 4 points. You probably see where I'm going with this one. Next one, 3 points. And then it starts getting easier. So the easier the prop to get the film, the lower the points. So what Mark and Ben are going to do is once they realise what the film is that I'm talking about, they're going to shout out the name of the film.
Oh, head to head.
Right?
Yeah. I like so this. No team play.
No,
here.
No, this is every person for themselves.
Oh, this is good. Vicious.
What happens if you get it wrong?
If you get it wrong, you're frozen for that particular round, and then the other person gets a chance to capitalise on those points.
Strategic.
You know what? I mean, I know that I'm a fully fledged member now, but come on, we've got to be cutthroat at some point, haven't we?
Big time.
Let's fact that you could... Oh, it's about, do you come too quickly? But like, but with your answers, and like, shoot you low, like, wow, bang, it's this. But then the other person...
What are you going to call it crying?
Say if I literally... try straight away and get it wrong. Ben could choose to go for 4 points knowing
or I can wait
just like, oh god, this is when test a character here.
See, I mean, it started off quite nice and some like props, whatever, and now you're like, oh my god, props.
So what's the name
for this
got?
Then?
Well,
come on, what have you got? And I'll see if I can.
Well, I came up with I came up with Francis Ford Coppola. And judging by that reaction, that is not the name of the game. So, Mark, what's the name of the game?
Think about it.
Okay.
Top of the props.
It's all right.
It's brilliant.
It's
top
brilliant.
Of the props.
It's fine.
I like it. And I can use the music from Top of the Pops.
Oh, nice. Yeah, you don't want The End by The Doors on this one. Sounds really luminous.
Can we have Top of the Props?
Yeah,
let's
fine.
Do it. Top of the Props. That is the game. So... should we just crack on with this?
Yeah.
Okay, so I've got the first film lined up. So for 5 points, the first prop is a GPS device. Have we got any takers?
Nope.
They're nodding their heads. So we're going to go to 4 points. So for 4 points, a fund jar. Sorry, it looks so tense.
God, I just don't want to go.
Okay, so are we going to go 3 points?
Yeah.
Right. A Boy Scout woggle.
Oh man, I know what it is, but I don't know.
Come on, you're gonna risk it. 3 points for grabs. For 2 points, a walking stick.
Up.
Ben's got it. 2 points for Ben. Boom. Well done. Well done. Wow, that is tense.
That is man. My heart rate's gone up.
We so need to do more games like this.
I'm not drinking strong, but it's just like Red Bull, I feel like. My heart is going.
So what did I get there? I got 2 points today.
You got 2 points. And just for the listeners at home, for 1 point, I was going to say a big bunch of helium balloons. And of course,
yeah, we'd have got it for that.
It was
good
up.
Work.
Thank you. So let's go to round two for 5 points. An alcoholic shot.
Imagine actually guessing there. You'd be an idiot.
I know. It's got to be hard. Idiot. For 4 points. A taxi cab. I know, I'm making it difficult, but that's the name of the game.
This is tense, man.
Okay. For 3 points.
Yeah.
A plush unicorn.
Deadpool.
Yep, Ben's got it. 3 points.
Come on now.
Shit,
3 points.
Well
you had done. That one, didn't you? Just yes. A fraction behind me.
Well done. So Ben is currently in the lead after two rounds with 5 points. Mark is on zero.
I'm going to spill my load on the first one now just to get even. Christ.
Okay, so round three. Are you guys okay? I just
very.
Want...
We're all right.
I am okay. Literally going to heal over. We're hard.
So for 5 points, a necktie.
No, I'm not risking it. I'm not going to do it. I was tempted.
Okay, so for 4 points, a pair of angel's wings.
Dogma.
Incorrect. No! You are blocked out.
You are locked out, baby.
Locked out. So for 3 points,
yeah.
A severed tongue.
Old boy.
He's got it.
Boom.
He's got it.
Come
He's
on
got
now.
Got it. So.
8 points I'm on.
You are on 8 points.
My life.
Come on, Mark. We got to see something spectacular.
I can still get this.
You can get this. There's still 10 points to play for, yeah.
There is. Okay, so round four. Dun, 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 dun. Okay.
Christ.
For 5 points, lots of cans of beer.
I'm not doing
it. Couldn't
that.
Say plethora. I've already said that earlier.
Four would be okay.
Okay. For 4 points, a police badge.
Super bad.
Oh, he's got it!
Wow! That is good. That is really good. Ooh. Holy
Wowzers.
Hell.
I was going to say 3 points drawing of a penis, 2 points waistcoat.
That was a risk.
Well, it's a good shot. Well done.
So you could win it. You could still end up with nine. So you've got to go for it on 5 points, man.
Wow.
You've got to go for it.
It's going to be
a risk.
Okay, so round five. This is the final round.
I just don't mind. I don't mind if I only have 4 points. At least I'm not going home with nothing.
That's true.
Christ.
Right. For 5 points, a small stone.
Come on, Ben, guess.
No.
Come on, risk it.
Okay, so we're going to go to 4 points, right?
So you got to get this right, Mark, to tie
Here
it up.
Here we go, for 4 points. A wet dinner jacket.
Nope.
No.
Oh, you got to have a guess, man.
No way.
Have a guess, because you can't.
Because then you could really lead. You could get like 3 matter. Points. I know, but I don't want to risk it.
So you're just accepting defeat. You're not even going to try and
but
win.
But it's points. So then as long as I totally absolutely nail it on the next episode, okay. I'm all right. You know, it's an ongoing game, isn't it?
No, it's not. We're not tallying up the points after 3 weeks.
What?
Sorry, dude, but no.
Please.
No.
Guys, remember your friends. Remember your friends.
Okay, I'll have a guess.
Okay.
I don't want to admit defeat, but what the fuck is that? You know what I mean? What the fuck? It's not Harry Potter.
Is that your guess?
No way. Yeah, it's not. I'm going to have to pass and go for three. I'm going to have to.
Okay, right. So for 3 points, a pink tutu.
Tooth fairy.
No, Ben. Ooh. Ben is locked out.
I'm locked out.
I can't Ben's win anyway.
This is for a bit of respect.
Yeah. A what? Pink?
A pink tutu.
What's for 2 points?
For 2 points? Okay. For 2 points, an American football cookie with laces out.
I still have no idea. The room.
No. Locked out.
What was it?
What's for 1 point?
For 1 point, a Hawaiian shirt.
I still don't know.
Is it Dave and Mike wedding dates?
No. It's Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
Oh, shit. Oh, that was tough. That was tough.
You had me then. Oof. That was...
So, no points on that particular round.
Yeah.
Ben's won again.
Victory is mine.
Yeah. Well done, Ben. Ben won with 8. Mark got 4 points.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I don't know about you, but I think I need a lie down and
tough.
A gin.
Oh. I definitely got some gins.
Oh my God. I wasn't even playing yet. I'm like,
That was the hardest game we've played yet.
That's really tough. Mm. Mentally taxing. I'm going to be quiz master next
Please
time
do.
Round.
Please do. I need some pride.
I don't know if I can go through the stress. Oh my God.
So right, that was Top of the Props, and we'll be back on the next episode.
Almost at the end, so let's do some nice old listener questions. Kicking things off, on Twitter we had at Harry Strats. Gemma, how does it actually feel now to have passed probation?
Glorious.
Yes.
I'm a proper skiffer. It feels amazing. And as well, like after the announcements and the photographs coming out on social media, I must say, Skit to the End fans are freaking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
The most interactive fans in the world.
They really are. Yeah. And like, thank you for everyone's kind words, but it feels absolutely effing amazing.
It's weird because when we got you for episode 51, I felt that was it then. It was like, yeah, we've got a...
Yeah.
I don't know why we put this probation in for 6 episodes, just to reannounce it.
Just to be
it.
Dicks.
Yeah. It's really funny. Like, you never, it was never ever going to be in jeopardy, but we kind of built up this storyline along Twitter and Facebook where people were actually going, I hope they keep her. So it feels good.
It feels absolutely amazing.
Good to hear, and it's nice to see that everyone on Twitter is fully loving you, and I see all the people going, oh please, girl power, and we had hashtag girl power.
We did. Mm-hmm. We did, and like pray for Gemma at one point.
Pray for Gemma.
We had that a couple of years ago though, before the chemo, so that was also a time as well. Swiftly moving on from cancer jokes, let's go to this is a great Twitter name by the way, at Sam Bon. Bon, bon, bon.
Oh, a bit of a Peter Serafinowicz, Brian Butterfield reference.
Very much so.
Nice.
Yeah, bon, 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 bons.
You all really do enjoy ripping into Terrence Malick.
Yeah.
Well observed. But I'd be intrigued to know, have you all seen the classic Thin Red Line?
I have, and it is one of the best war films that's ever been made. It's a fantastic movie, which is why it pisses me off when he makes absolute shite like Knight of Cups. Because he clearly is a very talented filmmaker. He's got a great visual sense, but he's just putting his talents to misuse at the minute.
Oh, I've seen the Ben Elton British comedy in the 90s, The Thin Blue Line, but unfortunately I have not seen this film yet, so it's on my list.
I used to like them.
It was good, wasn't it? It was fun.
I've never seen The Thin Red Line, but I've heard very, very good things about it, and it will be one I'm sure I will invest my time in very soon.
Yeah.
But
it's like 3.5 hours long or something. It's a lot of time.
Oh, 3.5 hour war films, what we do.
Yeah, that's true.
You know this. Andy Black. Hi, guys. I know it's TV related, but how are you guys finding Black Mirrors?
Oh, my God. Right, how
Black
long
Mirrors?
Have we got? Black Mirror.
Black Mirror. Black Mirrors. How are you finding Black Mirrors? Not very good. Or
I can't see myself.
My hair always looks shit afterwards.
Wow. How long have we got to talk about this? I've certainly been a bit vocal on my social media, Twitter, popcorn_heart_.
Oh, self-plug.
Plug it. Jesus.
I'm absolutely adoring season 3 of Black Mirror. I think I'm not going to reveal anything that goes on in any of the episodes. All I'm going to say is episode 3 of season 3 is possibly one of the greatest pieces of television I've ever seen.
Wow.
Certainly the best thing this year that I've seen. Charlie Brooker is, we were talking about Chris Morris last week being a British national treasure.
Mm-hmm.
I think the same can be applied for Charlie Brooker. The man is an absolute genius. If you've never seen it, all 3 seasons are on Netflix at the moment, but I am bloody loving it.
So I haven't yet watched season 3, and I had never seen any of it until last weekend. In preparation for the 3rd season, I thought, right, I'm going to watch the first 2 seasons. By God, why did I wait this long? Those first 7 episodes from seasons 1 and 2 are some of the best TV I've ever seen. There's an episode called White Bear, and I'm not going to go into the detail of it, but if you've not seen it, I would go watch that one first. That's kind of a litmus test. If you like that, you're going to like the whole thing.
Definitely.
It's an absolutely brilliant TV show, and I'm very much looking forward to watching the new season.
I've literally just put the tip in. That's it. I'm on episode 1.
What, just the tip?
That's it. I have literally watched the first one yesterday and I enjoyed it. I thought it was really good. I kept seeing people that I recognise. Mm-hmm. So the guy that does the training on The Office, the ginger guy, he was there. And I was like, oh, wicked, it's him. I've not seen him for ages, but it was good.
Yeah.
It involved a lot of pig sex, which was a bit
random.
It does. But it's given me it's a good taster to know what's sort of ahead, and the reviews and the people that are going crazy for it.
Unreal.
I think it's the episode, it's the one that you really like, the credits one. I forget.
Oh, 15 million credits.
Yeah, yes. I think it's that one that he co-wrote, Charlie Brooker co-wrote with his wife.
He did.
Connie Hook.
Yes.
Former Blue Peter presenter.
Wow. I wonder what Connie was up to.
And to think her mind is set on the way how that 15 million credits episode is. Oh my God. Absolutely brilliant. But yeah, please, I implore you, if nobody has seen this yet, it's on Netflix. Go and check it out. It's wonderful.
Brilliant. That's our endorsement.
Sorry.
I'm glad you haven't ruined it for me, because you haven't told me anything, so I'm quite happy about
it's
that.
I think it's one of those episodes, if somebody does start telling you a plot of a particular episode, that's gratefully unfair and you should unfriend them immediately.
Yeah.
Good. At Suki Kaika. Really like the fact you shared the contract online. But seriously, Gemma, I would like to know what lawyer you will use against Mark and Ben when it comes to it.
I'm using Bob Loblaws from Arrested Development.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yep, and if you want to see his work, he's got Bob Loblaws Law Blog.
Blah, 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 blah.
So that's your answer?
That's my answer.
Not Saul?
Nope, Bob Blah, Blah.
Perfect. At What's 23... I know that last time you answered a question, it was always going to be Spinal Tap. But after that, what is your favourite mockumentary? His is I'm Still Here, which I've not seen.
Is that the Bob Dylan one?
I don't know.
I'm not sure. No, I think it's
one... that's Joaquin Phoenix,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, when he's walking around.
My mistake.
Yeah, I've not seen that
one. Yeah, oh, it's awful.
I just didn't like the look of it. I was walking around as this person all the time. Mm. I just thought it looked shit. Mine would be What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, I second that, yeah.
Brilliant.
That is so good. And as well, director of the Thor 3 film for next year.
Wow.
Taika Waititi. Yeah, that's going to be interesting. I think for me, it would be any Christopher Guest film. So if we're having to take out Spinal Tap, I'd probably go with either Waiting for Guffman, which is amazing, or Best in Show.
Best in Show is great.
Yeah. Have you watched his new one, the one about mascots that's on Netflix?
It's on my list. I've not yet.
It's all right.
That's a pity.
Chris Duck has said, Oscar season isn't too far away. Right now, this is hard, the film of the year right now as it stands, and with what's coming up, still the most anticipated film for the year. I reckon we all say Star Wars. Rogue One.
If we're talking about Oscar type movies rather than blockbusters, the one I'm looking forward to the most is The Founder, starring Michael Keaton, which is kind of the story of how McDonald's came into being. Mm-hmm. That's going to be really interesting. My film of the year so far, I've said this multiple times already this year, but it's High Rise.
That good.
The High Rise was a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. I love that film. And I read J.G. Ballard's book for the first time a few weeks ago, and the book is fantastic as well.
I think for me, the film that I'm looking forward to seeing the most is La La Land with Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone.
Damien Chazelle.
Thank you. Yeah. So director of Whiplash, to those who weren't aware. It's already won quite a few awards. I think it won at the Toronto Film Festival about a month ago. A very high contender for some Oscars coming up. Film of the year, bit of a tricky one, because I'll be honest, I've not been that impressed with a lot of films this year. But for me, probably Hell or High Water.
Oh yeah, nice.
I think that's the top of the pile.
Do you know what? That's a film that has grown in my estimation. The longer it's been since we saw it, the more I find myself thinking about it.
Exactly.
It was the same thing with Nightcrawler when we saw that.
Yeah.
I think we rated it a 7 or something when we reviewed that. And now, I'd probably say it's a 9, because it's just over time it sticks with you, and Hell or High Water is the same.
Yeah, definitely.
Civil War is this year as well.
Damn good film. Damn good film.
Which is absolutely crazy. Yeah. But it's weird, isn't it, how we change like that? Because I remember when we did The Guest, we were like, it was pretty good. Yeah, it wasn't bad. And now I really love The Guest.
Great
like
film.
Over time.
Yeah.
It's just, I can't wait to see Hell or High Water again on Blu-ray when it comes out.
Yeah, me too.
At Helsey33, what film for you has been ruined by the choice of music or soundtrack?
Well, it's a song, and it's the same name as the film. So there's a film that came out, I think, 2001 called Jeepers Creepers.
Oh.
And now I understand why they probably did it, because I know like happy songs in disturbing sequences are quite unsettling. So, for example, Singing in the Rain in A Clockwork Orange. Mm. I think that is totally horrific. But this is just cack. It's really bad. Like the reason why probably they associated the song with the film was Jeepers Creepers, where did you get those peepers? It's like, ugh. And it was only for like one scene that lasts like 3 seconds. Like, oh, come on. So yeah, blow hard.
Is that the film that was directed by a paedophile?
Yeah. it was. So says it all.
I think for me, it would be Ghostbusters 2. In Ghostbusters 2, there's just a lot of really bad mid-90s rap songs that just sound really cheesy and really poor. But in a more general sense, I don't like it when the score tries to direct your emotions. So if it's a thrilling moment, you have like a kind of dun-dun-dun music, or you have, you know, if it's a sad moment, you have a little bit of plinky-plinky piano. I don't want my emotions to be guided by the music. I want the visuals to speak for themselves. Mm. It can be a bit much.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with, it's not a great film anyway, but The Amazing Spider-Man 2 had this absolute dogshit dubstep for every fight. I remember when Rhino came on open and it was really annoying. Like, the film's not great anyway, but that soundtrack was boom, 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 and I was just like, this is dreadful.
Like a Skrillex gig. Ugh.
But also, the most recent Ghostbusters wasn't a great film at all, but when I heard that Fallout Boy, who you gonna call?
Not you. I'm not calling you for a fact.
That's an atrocity, that song.
Some record company, that's what I'm going to call and get you sacked, you bunch of twats. This is Sashin has come through on Twitter and said, as it's Halloween coming up, if you could pick two horror villains to go head to head in a battle, which we get anyway on most films nowadays, watch sci-fi, there's loads. Who would you choose to go head to head?
I'm going to leave that with you two, because I don't really watch horror films, so I don't really have an answer to that. So what do you guys think?
I would go for Leatherface, because he's a hard, double-hard bastard, versus Jason from Friday the 13th, because them two would just beat the shit out of me. It wouldn't just be like, get an axe and kill. It would be full-on, just a wrestle.
Now that you've said that out loud, you realise Rob Zombie's going to make that, don't you?
He's there right now going, it's coming. Yeah.
I've gone for a little bit of a different outtake on it, but I've gone for Norman Bates from Psycho, versus Osamu Yamazaki from Audition.
Oh, Audition's a great film.
So I'm thinking, because they're like proper crazy in the head. I'm thinking like Norman's mother will like proper come out, and like Osamu will come out with the old piano wire as well. Like, giddy, 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 giddy. Terrifying.
So I think we should hire this person to skip to the end, right? Thomas Hill, who came on last week and asked us for our next top five, has now basically created a future topic.
Oh, yeah.
He's come through this week and asked another question, which I honestly think could be a topic. You can answer it now if you want, but what would be your favourite film for breaking the fourth wall? I like that.
That's a really good.
And that could make a top three, I reckon. Because he's just said he's watched Big Short and was blown away by how good it worked in the movie. Do you want to put that on the...
Oh, that's tough. I don't know that it's a full topic.
No. Ferris Bueller.
Do you know, I was thinking the same thing.
I really do like. Yeah. And I know Ben loves Deadpool.
Shite.
Actually, while Gemma just thinks, because that is a bit of a thinker, what do you think, Ben, about Deadpool? The director's left Deadpool 2, walked off, quit because of differences with Ryan on casting and Cable. Differences all the way there.
I didn't know that. Is that recent?
Yeah, yesterday, walked away.
Wow, I had no idea. That's very interesting, because I know
the first one, didn't he?
The talk was that Cable was going to be Kyle Chandler. So I don't know if it's that he wanted him and Ryan didn't, or if it's the other way around. I'm not sure, but I think that'd be great casting. Mm. Another name I've heard mentioned recently though was John Hamm, and I just love John Hamm. Ooh. I think he's magnificent. So I'd love to see him in it.
That'd be cool.
But yeah, I'd not realised that.
Yeah, it's crazy, it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I've thought of some. Well, I thought of two. Wayne's World, just because Wayne's World is amazing. Or even Wayne's World 2 as well. I just love how it just completely went, especially at the wedding scene of Cassandra. But on a dark side, Funny Games.
Yes. Oh.
Because right at the very end, you think the poor victims are going to get away with it, but nope. No, they don't.
I love that. Have you seen both versions?
I've only seen the German version.
The German version. Yeah. The American one is a shot-for-shot remake, because it's the same director. Yeah, he just remade his own film. But they're both brilliant. Yeah, like the bit when they kind of rewind the film.
And he directly looks at the camera as well. Yeah, like, you thought they were going to get away. Surely not.
Love
I'm
that.
I'm watching that tonight.
It's so good. Yeah.
The original.
Yeah. Yes.
Andrew Kenton has come through on Facebook and asked, what film, I mean, we've had this a lot for sequels, but what film would you like to see a prequel for? We always get sequel.
The Room. I want to know how Johnny and Lisa met. How did Danny get to where he was? Why did Chris R need the money?
Why did he turn to drug dealing?
There's a lot of questions to go there. Hell of a lot. I'd like more of a story of actually Tommy, not Johnny, of how he got £6 million to make that film.
Yeah.
That would be more fascinating to me. How do you make £6 million to fund the film yourself?
And how did he spend that? Because it's not on screen. I can't see any of that £6 million on screen.
All in that red dress. Swit swoo.
Prequels are, oh God, there's not many that come out anymore. We get a lot of sequels, hell of a lot. They're out every bloody week. Mm-hmm. Prequels, I've always wanted The Thing, and they did it. And it was with a different director and a different company, and it's kind of a remake rehash, and we got little bits and insight to it. But I would have liked to have seen John Carpenter do it and show us why it all came about and where this dog came from that was suddenly an alien and all the stuff that came with it and what they were doing, how they like Mac and everyone got into their job, not Mac and me, Mac McCready, how they got into their jobs and became this profession and all the kind of backstory behind that. Mm. But unfortunately, they've kind of already done it and John Carpenter wouldn't do it now, so...
I think for me, I'd want to see a prequel to Sicario because Benicio del Toro's character, Alejandro, is this really mysterious, interesting guy, and I want to know how he got to that point. Now, there is a sequel coming out to Sicario called Soldado that comes out in a year or two, and I had heard rumours that it was going to be a prequel, it was going to be his backstory, but that's not been officially confirmed. The logline for the film just says that it's about the drug war taking place in Mexico, and it stars Benicio del Toro and Josh Brolin again. But they've not confirmed whether it is a sequel or a prequel or not. I'm kind of hoping it's a prequel.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I think for my serious answer, there was a film last year that came out called The Lobster.
Yeah.
The first half's absolutely sterling. The second half is a bit of a wank. Kind of, it just nosedives.
Bit of a wank.
Love that. It's a bit of a wank, you know. But what I was kind of intrigued about was exactly why single people have to go to this hotel, and if they don't match up with someone, they turn into an animal. I would love to see how it gets to that particular point in time. I'd also like to see how the people in the woods came about, how they managed to escape the venue to kind of set up a civilization of their own. I think that film had so much gravitas. Unfortunately, it just kind of dwindled at the end. So I'd love to see how they get to that point.
Actually, I'm changing mine. The Shining.
Oh, that was on my list as well.
Give me a backstory to The Shining. That's what I want to see. Obviously, we'd have to get... So, who would they cast now? But yeah, I'm changing it. The Shining. That's
White,
my choice.
White Russell. Get White Russell in there.
Done. Two more questions. Damien Bullock has said, is there a director out there where you actually wish you could walk up to them and say, what the fuck were you thinking?
Kevin Smith.
Kevin Smith.
You arseholes.
Come on.
No.
Come on, you were asking the same thing. Because you love Kevin Smith. See, thing is, it should hit you harder than it does us. Because Gemma and I aren't fanboys. I mean, you like Smith more than I do, don't you, generally?
Yeah, yeah.
But we're not fanboys the way you are. Mm-mm. I've generally always disliked him, whereas you have things to love about his work.
Yeah.
So surely it should hit you harder that he's putting out absolute garbage now.
Yeah.
Surely you want to go up to him, give him a slap on his face and say, what are you thinking?
Why didn't I do that when I met him? Why did I not slap him?
Oh, and final
question.
For this
moment. I really want to interview you, but just before... What are you doing, dude? Yeah, it is frustrating. Yeah, you got a good point. I can't argue.
Mm-hmm.
I want him to do more stuff that... Yeah. The frustrating thing is how well he does the TV stuff at the moment. The Flash, Supergirl, all this. He does well, so he knows how to direct. I just wish he'd stop smoking weed and come up with these stupid ideas. And that isn't allegedly. He goes on camera and says, I'm stoned, and oh, how funny would it be to do yoga hoses? It's like... For you, it is funny because you're stoned. I'm not. I'm walking around wanting to watch another Chase and Amy or Dogma. It's very frustrating.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine.
The very final question to end it all. Ryan Abbott has said, when is the Skip to the End live show coming to the UK? Surely Nuneaton is the good place to start.
We are launching the tour at the Nuneaton Aerodome on December the 1st, 2019. Look out for your local listings.
One day, it sounds crazy, but one day I'd like to hire somewhere where we could invite some of our friends off the social media to come and watch a film with us, like a rewatch. We just get drunk, Strongbow sponsor us, and we put on Jaws or something for everyone to or Mac and me. And we just and everyone joins in as a celebration. I'd love to do it.
That
but where
cool.
would you do it? Our fans are all over the shop.
Yeah.
Everywhere. So maybe one day.
My good friend Macca, who I've known for a long, long time, listens to the show. And he said to me recently, have you ever thought about doing it as a video, putting it on YouTube? And I said to him, that kind of ignores the fact that we cut out a hell of a lot of shit. Yeah. The stuff that you listeners are hearing now, this is the cream of the crop. We cut out a lot of awful,
this
awful
is the cream.
Whack.
Imagine what the rest is like.
Exactly.
Imagine what the crop is.
So it just wouldn't really work on video, or else there'd just be cut edits every 30
we'd
seconds.
Like, we'd be like Howard Stern or like the Chris Evans show in like the early 90s. Mm-hmm.
I think I'd like to do a private a screening one day somewhere. Maybe we'll, one day, not yet, in a couple of years, but one day we'll do a screen, invite everyone down, 50 quid a ticket.
Yeah. That'll pay. Got to think of the bunts, haven't we?
But keep your questions coming. The best way to reach us is on Twitter at STTE Podcast. There's 40,000 people on there now. 40,000.
Mm-hmm. Heck, a lot of people.
Facebook, which is Facebook.com/skipthem podcast, or do the old school. Email us, podcast@skiptheend.co.uk, and we'll answer them all again on the next episode.
So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. The first one with Gemma as an official employee.
Hoorah!
There's something I want to kind of give you both.
Oh, yeah.
So now that you are actually official, it's time to make you official and give you your first official... Keering with you on.
Nice.
Oh,
how nice are they?
They're very cool.
They are sexy.
So that's a little present.
Should give away some of these as prizes, shouldn't we?
Oh, that's
we
a good
should.
Idea.
Yeah, I think we'll look at maybe Twitter. We're giving a lot away at the moment. If you look on our Twitter, we're giving literally prizes away every day. DVD bundles, Blu-rays, facials. We're giving the works.
Facials?
As
remember
Bridget
the spa
Jones
weekend?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We're don't giving, do this stuff willy-nilly.
Yeah, we give a lot away.
Willy-nilly.
Projectors, but... Keyrings, I think, weirdly, I put them on Instagram. It's one of our most, oh, can I have one, can I have one? I'm like, maybe we'll give some away at some point. But that's for you at the moment, guys. Yeah. Exclusive for you two.
Thanks.
Very cool. Very cool. The next episode is actually going to be coming out in 3 weeks. We're having a little bit of a break because Mark is going off on holiday, which is fine because he submitted his request to HR 8 weeks in advance.
10 weeks
ten
ago.
10 weeks in advance, Gemma. You listening?
Come on.
So it's fine. So we're having a 3 week break. So, you know, absence make the heart grow fonder and all that kind of stuff. Those of you who listen regularly should know by now our new release date is Saturday, #SkipToTheEndSaturdays. So 3 weeks from this one, we'll have the next one out. We're going to be reviewing Arrival, which is the new film directed by Denis Villeneuve, who directed Prisoners and Sicario and the upcoming Blade Runner movie. He's my guy at the minute. I'm loving Denis Villeneuve and starring Amy Adams. That looks absolutely fantastic. What is our rewatch pick? It was my choice. We're going to rewatch Crash, the David Cronenberg controversial film about people who get boners from car crashes.
Essentially, that's what it is.
Do you want me to save that audio and then use it for when you just introduce that section? This film's about a boy that gets a boner from a car crash.
Yeah, that'll do.
Done.
What's our topic, Mark?
It's going to be thrilling. It's the top three thrillers of all time, which it blows my mind. 2 years down the line, we didn't do it. Mm.
Here's my guess. Mark's going to use the song Thriller by Michael Jackson somewhere on that episode.
Really?
Gemma, who are we masturbating over?
Oh, the king of comedy, Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
Oh, this is great.
I can't wait. And we'll also be giving away prizes. We'll do the next round of Top of the Props and a hell of a lot more.
For the people out there, I've got to just do this now. The people out there that will moan that it's been 3 weeks, markandme.com has got my own little solo podcast. I'm going to put an episode out in between so the wait isn't so bad. It's not the ideal thing. It's not Skip to the End, but it just gives you that little, you know, just a little filler.
You know,
I'll do that.
Where's my shameless self-plug? Gemma bragging about a blog. You bragging about your side project. Where's my thing?
Come on, you've got to do it.
Coming
do
soon,
it.
Ben's podcast.
Ben's thing.
Look out for my thing. Coming soon. We'll see you in 3 weeks.